Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Dedication isn't born in the light of day. It's carved in the quiet hours before the world blinks awake. At Boar's Head, we rise with a mission to deliver craftsmanship worthy of your table. A slice of something special folded into every moment worth savoring. Because dedication means delivering only the very best. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
All right, so this sucks, but we can't have our intro anymore. I don't really have an intro for you right now because we didn't want to just ham-fist something together. We're going to figure it out by the middle of the week. However, if you think you can throw together a custom intro for us, no copyrighted music, none of that shit, let us know. Maybe you can be the intro person. That'd be a big thing. If you think you can throw together a custom track, something for us to have as an intro to our podcast, let us know. Otherwise, we're going to make something on our own, but we still need a few days. We've done 350 episodes, at least, with our intro. So to have to ditch it now kind of sucks ass. We did a couple non-regular intros for certain episodes. It's kind of like a joke, but this blows. There's no two ways about it. This really sucks because it's an intro is an identity for a show. I learned that in working in TV. I was told that some of the best shows, whether even like in news, people gravitate because they hear the chimes. They hear the NBC, dun, dun, dun. They hear shit like that. An intro is as important as almost anything because it creates basically, what's the best way to put it? It creates a routine. It's a kicking off a routine. And for 2 days a week, for a long time, we had that intro and it kicked off a routine for many people. That sounds dramatic and like we're overreacting here. And trust me, I'm not going to go take down big music because of it, but it's a bummer. So point being, we want to replace it with something good and not something shitty temporarily. So right now it's me telling you this and talking to you. We got a couple days to figure something out. If you think you can make something cool, let us know. If not, we'll workshop something together that can at least feel similar to our old theme, our old intro. Anyway, this has been Jeff Lowe with your Jeff D. Lowe, for those who want to go by my, I guess, internet name, giving you a little breakdown as to why the intro is dead. It's a real shame. Movie quotes we can still use, by the way. We can still use movie quotes. It's not music. Anyway, fucking incredible episode. Zack Snyder, Taylor Sheridan movie review. Great draft. It's a good one. Enjoy. Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool episode. I want to say it's 360.
We're definitely exiting the 350 soon.
We're close. We're close to doing all. Again, it's a meaningless. It's a
our Xbox episode
benchmark. But 359. But I'm excited for the episode that officially means we've done a year's worth of podcasts because that just sounds ridiculous. Like, I know we're not the first to do that. There's Joe Rogan's done like what, a billion podcasts. Part of my take's done a zip, whatever. But it's to say that personally is, I don't know, it's kind of a funny benchmark.
Yeah, the 360 episode's a big one. You know, that's the one we're going to have to lead off with a bang. Luckily, we're at 359, so we can have a nice casual discussion about Taylor Sheridan. And what's been going on with him?
Episode 360, 40 minutes in, we're going to Red Ring of Death. It's going to happen. You're going to need to put a towel on us so we don't
run us into oblivion and send us back in.
That was the joke.
We have.
I got it out of my system.
Big episode. Taylor Sheridan review. Those Who Wish Me Dead. HBO Max. Also, Zack Snyder is on today. Interview with Zack Snyder, the man himself, had a fun time. I don't think he expected us to do the Gahool, Guardians of the Gahool question. And then we have a draft. We have a sports video game character draft. So not just like any character, you're not just going to draft Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky. Like, it's specific to a certain year, certain release of a game. I don't know. Like, sports are kind of, it's like playoff season for like hockey and basketball. It just kind of feels right to do this now. Also, starting next week, I meant to do it this week, but I didn't do it right. So I couldn't really get, I didn't have the right amount of answers to do it. the audience part of the draft is going to be one person. Going to randomly select one person every episode and have them represent the audience. You got to have an Instagram and a Twitter, though, because you got to be open up to getting crapped on like we do. That's just how it's going to work. You could also win it, though. So one person each week will get the chance to represent. You can always find the links on our Twitter and our Reddit. So those where you can find them. Go on there, at Lights Camera Pod on Twitter. We will tweet out that we will make sure. Sometimes I forget. I'll make sure we do it. We'll randomly select one listener, audience member to represent the audience in the draft. This is we're calling this the office rule, because so many of our audience are like, stop. We have to, they're like, it's like they've had a meeting. They're like, stop picking the fucking office. So we're going to put it up to one person. I hope that first person only picks takes office. Yeah. I hope mm-hmm. they only, mm-hmm. I hope they only take like Creed Bratton. That'd be committing the best to the troll.
Committing to the bit for sure.
Trill, like you are back on in your home base.
Yeah, I got a bunch of great observational comedy material about flying on a plane.
Good.
Which the one thing I do love about the newer planes is, and by newer I mean I guess like built after 2000, because anything built after 2000 just feels new. Is the flight tracker stuff? Like yeah. I like pulling up that flight tracker and seeing where you are. It makes me feel like I'm in the cockpit with the captain. I'm like responsibly like monitoring the flight. Like, okay, guys, good. We're on course.
See, would you, I'm reverse. I don't like it because for me, either. It's almost like I'm like running on a treadmill or something. Right. And you're watching like the minutes click up and I'm just like sitting there. And I'm like, fuck, it's going to take longer. And every time you look at it, it just feels like it takes more time.
That's my thing. But I bet you'll agree with this. Once you do it, though, it's like game over. You can't really turn it off, because then you just know it's like you always know it's there, but it's a big seal breaker. Once you hit it on the screen the first time, you're going to cycle back to it so often that you're watching the sand in an hourglass, basically.
Or I like it when you're hand on a clock. I like it when you're making the initial descent and then like it like updates sporadically. I wish it was dynamic to where it was actually like tracking the real altitude of the plane so you could watch the numbers plunge down. Because you'll like the initial descent will be like 33,490. And then the next time it updates will be 27,324 or something. And it is kind of satisfying to be like, I knew the plane was declining in altitude. I could feel it, but it's nice to see the numbers.
You just want to see it like you're playing like, what was it? Tom Clancy's Air Force Combat, wherever that game was. What was that game? What was it? Ace Combat, right?
Ace Combat definitely was not a Tom Clancy.
No, but it was a fighter pilot game, right?
Yeah, Ace Combat is a fighter pilot game. It's what's the company that made like Ridge Racer? Is it Namco?
Oh, it was Tom Clancy's Hawks was the one I was thinking of, but Ace Combat was the one, if I remember correctly. I think I played it once. I had one of them, I'm pretty sure.
I like I used to like the old school flying games. You know, back when the PC, I mean, I'm talking like late 90s when you had the joystick controller for the PC.
Because
there are very few games that offered you like the 360 degrees of freedom. And I know you went through a flight simulator phase, but even flight simulator back then, you felt like you had complete like 360 degree controller or something. It was nice. And now
those things were legit. Those joysticks that were like, they weighed like 10 pounds. And they were just like massive and took up a giant chunk on your desk. And they had like those giant optical cables that were like a tube. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You got to plug in your compact.
Yeah, like the 128 pin connectors on the back with the screw connectors.
Yes, exactly.
I miss doing the screw connectors on the VGA cables. Every time you like change monitors. Monitors just, you mean HDMI, but like you do USB-C, you just don't get the same feel as like cutting yourself on a pin or something, taking out a VGA cable.
How do you know that the HDMI is not going to fall out? You don't. You do know once you screw in that 59 pin connector for your VGA.
Yeah, it was such a nice color blue as well.
No. Oh, those are beautiful. And I got Resident Evil Village and I finished it this weekend.
You beat it already? It's probably not a long game, right?
It's probably like it's not super long, but I also didn't go through all the bells and whistles of trying to find every like item or like, you know, go through everything. I just would like powered through the campaign more or less. It was fun though. I really liked it.
Yeah, I beat the first boss and then I had to leave and travel, and so I'm anxious to get back to it. But we were having a laugh because the main character is a pain pig.
Yes,
it is. It's really funny because, you know, the game's in first person, and the only thing you can really see in first person is like hands, right? Hands or feet or legs. This dude gets his fingers or hands cut off like no less than 60 times in the first 3 hours of the video game. Mm-hmm. And then he puts this the ointment on it and it just heals him up. It's wild.
It's Lady D's bathwater. Just pours it on and just immediately fixed his hand. And again, like you were saying, so the guy has his hand sliced off at one part. And he puts it back together with the clothes on it. And the healing also heals the clothes. It fixes the fabric, which was sliced.
I don't know. I hope there's a plot explanation for it, because the magical ointment's not doing it for me.
I go to the Resident Evil wiki. There's been like 100 Resident Evil games, has there not?
Without being an expert on it, I feel like there has to have been a billion of them.
Well, there's at least, I think there's 10 mainline games. So there's the 1 through 8 numerical ones. And then I believe Resident Evil Code Veronica for the Dreamcast, and then Resident Evil 0. Those are considered mainline games. Yeah, and then there's a bunch of spinoffs and whatnot.
Yeah, I remember there's the ones with Chris Redfield. Then there's the ones with Leon Kennedy. And those, because what do you call it? I wanted to play that one because we had the same last name. And the one I got, I didn't particularly love. Not Resident Evil 2, because I remember that one was good. But it was a different one, I think. But, dude, I liked it. The fight with Lady D was very rewarding. I know you said you beat that one, but that was very fun. That whole area of exploration was extremely fun. And the graphics look great on PS5.
Yeah, they do. They do.
We just got an email. Kenjack, you probably got it. It's, here's the lineup. Roku Originals launching May 20th. Let me know what you think about this. What, Trill, do you recognize here? I'll read you some of the names. Die Hard, Dishmantled, Dummy, Game Show, Punked, Reno 911.
Wait, is Die Hard Kevin Hart?
Yeah.
Is this like a new show with Kevin Hart?
These are all Quibi shows.
Quibi's originals, man. Oh.
These are all Quibi shows that they just poured it over to Roku. Yeah.
Good for Roku.
And I'll tell you what, Control F Quibi, no chance. Not a chance. Not in the email. Never would they put that in there.
Chrissy's Court? Is Chrissy's Court back?
Yes. Chrissy Teigen's picture's in here. Yeah.
She's on like the front billing of the entire announcement. She's literally the center picture. Wow. That's incredible.
Unbelievable. I was like, Roku Original, these look familiar. That's what they are.
Oh, can we talk Mayor of Easttown?
Yeah, I caught up on that because I actually figured we may talk about it. So I'm glad I did. The last app. Okay, so no, we will not spoil anything. HBO Max show for HBO. Oh, it's tough saying just regular HBO now. HBO show on HBO Max, obviously. I think it's a good show. Right?
It's the current show that everybody seems to be talking about.
Yes.
It's like
that's a fact.
That's the show that HBO has won, you know, this 8 week period in the cultural discussion of the one show everybody's watching. It seems to be Mayor of Easttown. It's a good show. I like it. Talking to people, I feel like some people are going overboard as to the overall quality of the show. I think it's a good show. The way people are talking about it is like it's True Detective season one or something.
Yeah, no, I actually saw someone make that direct comparison on Twitter. They're like, that was this episode was as good as anything I've seen in True Detective season one. Like, that's crazy. That's craziness to say that this early on.
Yeah, it's a good show, but it's like, you know, the whole mystery in a small town with the protagonist who has her own demons is, I mean, it's not
reinventing the wheel. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I mean, most of all, the show is great because I think like the cast is great. I mean, Kate Winslet is Kate Winslet, but like Jean Smart is fantastic in, you know, the role she's in, and then Evan Peters and Guy Pearce, but it's a good show. I recommend people watch it in order to know what everybody's talking about. Cause this is the current show of the moment.
I was thinking Val Kilmer and Heat. Because he had a good ponytail in Heat, but he was kind of a
semi-good
guy.
It's nice when the show, the moment is like good though. Like, right. Like that, was always my thing with Tiger. Yeah. Like, Tiger King, I was like, ah, that was a little different because it was like super pandemic-y. Now things, it's like almost the opposite at this point, but it's nice when it's like, that was my thing. I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot. Enough people who I trust like it. And it's been, Yeah, it was a good catch up. I've caught up on a lot of stuff. There's somebody yelling about me watching The Boys. I don't know. I guess I'll eventually.
Invincible. Watch it. I think getting Invincible and Mare of Easttown's a good start.
That was Invincible. I don't know. Maybe because I don't know. I haven't watched The Boys, so I can't say. Invincible was very much my shit though. And maybe The Boys will be. I don't know. Eventually, I'll watch it.
You'll watch It's Always Sunny, and then me and Troy can make more references.
See, I care more about doing a start to finish Always Sunny than really anything else. That's a lot. And I've also seen a lot of It's Always Sunny. Like, I've seen enough of it already where, like, I know the show where I do want to do a full. But that's for another time. Mm-hmm. That's for
Charlie another. Work is one of the greatest episodes of television ever made.
That and Charlie McDennis was a great episode. Oh, fuck. The Revolutionary War one I was watching the other day, that one was so funny. The gang cracks the Liberty Bell, I think it was. But dude, so funny. That show is absolutely
starkful. I had a friend once who watched like all the funny clips from Parks and Rec on YouTube, like all the Ron Swans, like all like just the compilations. Then it's like, I'm finally going to watch it and watch. He's like, wasn't that great? Like I saw like a lot of the funny shit on YouTube. I'm like, well, yeah, you watched the best bits on you. Like
it's like watching a compilation of every home run of the season and be like, oh, the full games aren't that good. That's wild.
Yeah. It's like, what? Yeah. I mean, yeah, you already watched the funny stuff. So you'd seen it already.
Epic,
it's like,
what epic Ron Swanson, J-O-I.
Speaking of the word epic, absolutely unrelated. I watched an epic mealtime video the other day.
Hell yeah. What'd they do?
A 2021. He did. It was like a very hot pizza.
Damn. Fucking running shit still. Glad to hear it.
Shout out to Harley Morenstein, though. An OG YouTuber.
He is. He was around forever. Damn.
Let's do a quick ad read, then we'll get back to our usual stuff. This episode brought to you by 3Chi. I used 3Chi this weekend. Needed a good deep sleep, and the cookie is fantastic. 3Chi, the number 3, CHI, 3Chi, industry leader in Delta-8 THC products. All products are formulated by a biochemist and made in the USA with USA-grown hemp. They got Delta-8 is a federally legal version of THC. That's what it is. Those 3Chi is a federally legal version of THC, but it's more functional. It's a more functional alternative to marijuana. Gives an amazing buzz, great body feel, clear head, all that. Less anxiety and paranoia, though. And the edibles are delicious. It's available online at 3Chi.com. Number 3CHI.com. And at retailers around the country, must be 21 to purchase. Remember, it's not CBD. So that's my warning. It's a psychoactive. It'll give you a buzz. So just be careful with that. Don't get this and think like, oh, I'm going to mellow out a little bit for my flight. Like you may just fall asleep and may wake up at the end of your flight. Like it just, which sounds great actually, because fuck flying. But yeah, 3Chi, number 3CHI.com to shop for Delta vapes, gummies, tinctures, oils, and their fantastic homemade edibles. The brownie, I think, is the best one. Cookie's the biggest one though.
I'm going to try the brownie tonight. I haven't tried the brownie yet. Got to sit in my camera. I'm going to try one.
Brownie's gooey. Use code CAMERA, CAMERA, to get 5% off your order. That's a great code right there, folks. CAMERA to receive 5% off your order. By the way, my dog Mimosa's barking, so if you hear that, that's just what that is. We have a lot of trailers and news. We didn't talk about Venom the other day.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
I don't know. I think because the way it's one of those trailers that dropped the like immediately after a podcast, and so it kind of fell into that zone where we forget it happened. But yeah, we didn't talk about Venom, Let There Be Carnage. They released the first trailer, and they showed quite a bit of carnage. Like, they just showed carnage, which that's kind of what Sony does. Sony just kind of shows you everything with their trailers. Like, their trailer department has a rule, I think. It's just show them all the cool shit, which worries me for the Spider-Man coming up, because Marvel Studios does not have control over what they show in those trailers, and Sony usually cuts a real spoiler heavy trailer for the Spider-Man movies. But what do we think about the first trailer for Let There Be Carnage, with obviously Woody Harrelson playing Carnage?
I like the trailer because the whole time you're just like, I want to see Woody Harrelson. I want to see what we're going to see Woody Harrelson. When are we going to see Woody Harrelson? Yeah, he's doing the voiceover, and then boom, you see Woody Harrelson with the hair, and your brain just, it just is like, oh yeah, that's the shit, baby.
That's Woody. That's the guy.
That's what I got.
He's
gonna
be Carnage. And
I think history has been kind to Venom, and I think people are going to be excited for this one. The more I think about it, the more I kind of enjoy the stupidity of the original Venom movie, because it was a comic book movie that like it kind of took itself seriously, but at the same time didn't really. I don't know how to quite explain it. they straddle that line, because the whole concept and the Venom voice is ridiculous, by the way. That's what kind of makes me think that they're just like ironically doing it.
What, that Tom Hardy's ironically doing the Venom voice? What do you mean?
Well, just the quality of the Venom voice. It sounds like a voiceover for a sock puppet on a children's TV show.
Tom Hardy won't even let them use like a fucking like audition or any effects whatsoever. He's like, I'm just going to keep doing it until my voice gets raspy enough to where I sound like Venom.
Yeah, they're like, well, you know, Tom, we're going to bring in Frank Oz for this. It's like, no, I'm going to do the voice of Venom. It's going to be me. It's going to be me. It's going to be me.
Me and my three friends. Yeah. from Liverpool.
Me and my two friends from Liverpool. Hello, I'm Venom.
It looks cool though. I think I dig Venom, and I like the idea of having Woody Harrelson as Carnage. He definitely, I agree with you in that. Sometimes he's a type of actor that could take me out of whatever it is, and then I'll stop and be like, that's Woody Harrelson. But I'm excited to see what he could do here. Also, Shriek, Naomi Harris playing her, is going to be sick as well. I read a little bit into the comic book run that I think they're modeling this after, and it looks really fucking sick. I'm interested to see how they do it. And also, Andy Serkis directing this one, which is pretty cool. A lot of people think of him as just the monkey guy or the golem guy. That guy can direct. He's got some good chops.
The golem guy.
He's the golem guy.
Hey, aren't you the golem guy? Can you go up to Andy Serkis and he's having dinner at what's Carbone? The spicy rigatoni that everyone likes.
Yes, delicious.
And Andy, you're just like, hey Andy, can you do the golem voice?
That's his Wakanda forever.
Yes, I want the spicy rigatoni.
Oh, Stephen Graham in this one too, by the way. Did you ever watch, neither of you watched Boardwalk Empire, right?
I'd seen some, never watched all of it, no, which I know, I'm sure that's another one that I should probably watch, but...
Stephen Graham as Al Capone in Boardwalk Empire, unbelievable. He's the best Capone I've ever seen. He's just a great actor in general. He's in like Irishman and I think Snatch, a few other things. He's awesome. I want to see him in everything.
That's Venom, Let There Be Carnage. Moses barking so much. Let's move on to the next trailer as I let try there be and carnage. So I'm in the back of my building, and there's a guy across the way, and she just refuses to stop barking at this man on the computer, which that's his fault. Don't put your desk in the window, fucking weirdo. The back alley.
It's 8 o'clock. Work time's over. You're not getting overtime.
Yeah. Who works at 8 o'clock? Next up on the list, more trailers. How about Snake Eyes? That's right. The spinoff to the G.I. Joe franchise, Snake Eyes. Snake Eyes was in the G.I. Joe movie. This is a very different Snake Eyes, is what it seems.
I got a good rhyme for Eminem when he does the Let There Be Carnage song. I've been thinking about it, okay? Okay, so he goes like, I'm with Woody Harrelson. Carnage is a Red Raider like Graham Harrell, son.
Yeah.
Wow. Pulled that out of nowhere. I didn't know where you're going with that one. What a fucking pull.
All right, I'm going to read this really quickly. A lone fighter is welcomed into and trained by an ancient Japanese ninja clan called the Arash. Nope, not pronouncing that. But finds his loyalties being tested when secrets from his past are revealed as he eventually goes on the path to become the hero known as Snake Eyes. Now, Henry Golding is playing Snake Eyes, and that's kind of the big thing people are taking away from this. Trailer, Kenjack, you see, I like the trailer. But what did you think, Kenjack? You seem to like it as well.
Yeah, no, I think it's awesome. Especially because, number one, we know that the cast of this is going to be sick. Henry Golding, I don't know how he's going to translate as an action star, because I feel like I've never seen him do that. Don't seen him do more romantic roles than anything else, not just Crazy Rich Asians, but other shit as well. But Ico Uwais from the Raid franchise is awesome. He's playing Hardmaster. And Hardmaster is a great name, by the way. I just love that. I'm the Hard Master. But also Andrew Koji, who's in Warrior. He's such a fucking great, but just like physically imposing martial artist. I can't wait to see him in this. And the trailer just looks cool. It's, you know, it's more like a teaser almost. I feel like it's just like a minute long of just a guy, you know, beating the shit out of some people in a car, slicing up somebody some swords, little bit of action with an Uzi, and then that's all you get. I mean, and that's all I want. I mean, show us what's going on, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the director, Robert Schwenke, did The Time Traveler's Wife. I forgot about that one.
Very relevant to this too.
Red, RIPD, the Divergent series, Insurgent, the Divergent series, Allegiant, The Captain, and then Snake Eyes. So, you know, what? Look, it looks cool, man. Like, and I think Henry Golding's gonna knock it out of the park, transitioning to being an acting star. Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, I guess that's kind of the cool thing about like acting now. And like, part of it's because everybody's in a Marvel movie or a DC movie or whatever you want to call them, or comic book movie. But it's like, it's kind of cool that actors can do like anything and not necessarily get like labeled. Like in the 90s, Hugh Grant couldn't make the jump being an action movie, right? Like Hugh Grant was Hugh Grant. And you know, vice versa, is like Arnold always seemed like a little out of place when he was in something that necessarily, like we'll say, like what's the movie where he got pregnant, a junior with Danny DeVito? Well, no, that was Twins.
No, that's Twins.
The junior, yeah, Junior is the movie where he got pregnant. I'm trying to think of who else,
or just in roles like that. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Junior, 1998. Yeah, Danny DeVito's in Junior too. We love Danny.
Wait, did he direct Junior?
No, Ivan Reitman directed Junior. But yeah, we love Danny DeVito so much in Twins, him and Arnold, that we had to give him back. And the whole premise was like,
I'm having a baby.
Yeah, it was basically like ahead of the curve of like the whole impreg thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Some guy like in Hollywood is just like, I'm going to be so fucking hot if Arnold got pregnant. Imagine the Terminator T, Hunter. I mean, just had a big ass baby bump.
Hollywood's so messed up. Yeah, you never know. Like, it could have been the genesis for it, but it also could have just been like, we need Arnold to do something. What's ridiculous? We'll do this.
It's the only thing is with Golding is like, you don't know if he can be leading man is one thing, like that's its own jump, but to be leading man action star is also another. You know what I mean? Like, action star is like, you need to really sell that, I feel like, to us as an audience, you know?
Yeah, and I agree. But so much of it just comes from, I don't know, how the movie's stylized. I feel like it's weird how this is so, and I don't know, like, I guess there's other, you know, there's other G.I. Joe characters in here, like Storm Shadow and Scarlet.
It did Hard Master.
The trailer didn't really try to sell you on the involvement and the connection to G.I. Joe, which I think may have been a smart move. Because I think those who are savvy will be like, or into G.I. Joe will be like, okay, this is a G.I. Joe movie. And those who may have been turned away by the shittiness of the prior G.I. Joe movies, I'm sure there's some like in-depth fan community that thinks those movies are brilliant. So I don't mean to shit on everyone when I say that, but they kind of do. Even if you look at the poster, it just says Snake Eyes. I don't even see if it says it. Doesn't
it says G.I. Joe on like the bottom right?
Yeah. So it's like it's there, but they're not like really going out of their way to tell people that this is a G.I. Joe character.
Well, yeah, it's also like a reboot of those movies, because at least that's what they advertised it as. So, because the first one, I believe, or the first two had Ray Park as Snake Eyes, and the first G.I. Joe, an okay movie. G.I. Joe Retaliation, absolute dog shit.
Right, the first G.I. Joe wasn't, I mean, it wasn't great. I don't think it was that bad, though.
Second one, though. Remember they killed Channing Tatum in like the opening 5 minutes?
Yeah, one of the worst bait and switches, and Bruce Willis was in it. Like, fucking.
Wasn't like Dwayne Johnson in it for like 7 minutes? And then
I think he was like a main in the second one, no?
Oh, in the second.
He was a main in the second. Sorry, I'm yawning. But no, the Channing Tatum thing. They alluded to him being in the whole movie, and then, yeah, he dies like minutes in. Not like 30 minutes in, like
Brendan Fraser, I think, was in the first one, right? Didn't he play like I don't remember the character's name, but some G.I. Joe general, if I remember correctly.
Did Tommy Lee Jones as well?
He just like shows up and he's like wearing a beret and he's like, hey, G.I. Joe, what's up?
Jeffrey Stone IV, aka Sergeant Stone, played by Brendan Fraser, uncredited.
Dennis Quaid, that's who was in it. Oh, and Brendan
Fraser.
Makes
sense. Dennis Quaid, what a fucking legend. G.I. Joe himself. But it's weird, I don't know that much about G.I. Joe lore, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't know like what, like I, that's so like unknown to me, where like they could totally fuck up the Snake Eyes story. I would have no clue, because I don't know what the Snake Eyes story is, other than he's just like an insane swordsman that can like use guns at the same time. He's a gun kata guy, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there is like some G.I. Joe lore, but the original lore that I remember was it was an animated series that was created to sell the shittiest like 4-inch toys you could ever imagine. And then the second you got those toys, you wanted to twist them so hard the rubber bands at the waist snap.
Yep. And then you're just fucked.
Oh,
Yeah.
And then suspension was dead.
I broke my ripcord.
The torsion on my snake eyes is just dead.
Somehow, like every sandbox in America in 1996 had a G.I. Joe action figure in it. I don't know why, but like that was the natural, that was the burial place for the G.I. Joe action figures that no one else wanted anymore.
My parents would get me the like the World War II G.I. Joe. So I'd have like one with like a Tommy gun or like an M1 Garand, and like the other kids would have like the guys with like the cool ass like future gun thing and like the Uzis and shit. And like those ones look cool, but I like the other ones better.
Like the original G.I. Joes that were their dolls. Like, yeah. You know, for boys, when they're marketed towards boys, they're like 12-inch action figurines. But those are dolls. And that's okay. But I just think the marketing on it's kind of funny. Because when I collected the 12-inch Star Wars figures, my mom was like, oh, nice dolls. And I'd be like, Mom,
please.
They're 12-inch action figurines.
Please.
But they're dolls. And it's cool. It's cool. Boys should be able to play with dolls. I think that's cool.
I'm just looking at 2000s G.I. Joes on eBay now. Those were the days.
Next thing. Ad read time. We got to break up the ad. A lot of trailer. Got to break up the ad read. Break them up with some ad reads. American Giant. Summertime, folks. American Giant's got much more. We talked about flannels and stuff earlier in the year, but American-Giant.com is where you want to go to get some of their fantastic t-shirts. It's that time of year. Hoodie t-shirts, even though it's like hoodie season's kind of ending. It's time for t-shirts, v-necks, all that. Have something that fits, that's durable when you go out, going out in the town, doing whatever you do. You need to have a fantastic set of clothes, and American-Giant is the way to go. All American made as well. Fantastic stuff that holds up, built with custom developed heavyweight cotton fleece, made from locally grown cotton, reinforced elbow patches, protect against wear, durable double lined hood for their hoodie. Again, American made from cotton to the zippers. 50% off when you use code LIGHTS at American-Giant.com. 50% off code LIGHTS at American-Giant.com. They got some great clothes. That time of year to replenish the clothing. Next trailer on the list.
You know how golfers like have like a, you know, a practice simulator at their house and stuff?
Yeah.
Do you think Andy Serkis has a practice green screen?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Where he just films himself and then just practices.
He does weird voices and walks around with like the monkey stilts thing.
He's going to slip into different characters every night. Next trailer is the Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard, which is one of the more difficult titles to ever say out loud. Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard, just it really rolls off the tongue. 4 years after the events of the original film, which I think like people remember it, but if you didn't, like, I don't think this is not like saying 4 years after the events of the Avengers.
Yeah.
4 years after the events of the Hitman's Bodyguard, bodyguard Michael Bryce is on a company mandated sabbatical when Sonya Kincaid, the wife of Hitman Darius Kincaid, whom Bryce shares an uneasy friendship with, rescues him from an assassination attempt to rescue Darius. He made sense of that. Congrats. Due to his sabbatical, Bryce is not allowed to use firearms or lethal weapons of any kind and must use his wits and intelligence to save Darius and save the day. Ryan Reynolds, Samuel Jackson, Salma Hayek, Frank Grillo, Antonio Banderas, Morgan Freeman, Richard E. Grant, Tom Hopper. A lot of names here. A movie I forgot was coming out.
Kendrick. Yeah, that's definitely one that got lost in the scuffle of COVID delays for me, for sure. I do like this cast a lot. I think that the first Hitman's Bodyguard, and this kind of goes back to what you're saying about the title just not rolling off the tongue. But the Hitman's Bodyguard, I think, was like not great, but also like a movie that we could watch like on. That's a movie I would love to watch on TNT or FX or something. You know what I mean? That's a movie I would put on in any of those situations for sure. And this movie, I think it has an addition to the cast. Like Antonio Banderas is a great addition. Tom Hopper, I fucking love Tom Hopper. If you guys know me, you know I love Black Sails. That dude is just a tall, jacked up king. Also in Umbrella Academy, I think, and a few other things. Salma Hayek's amazing as well. Just like there's great extra cast. I mean, if they can do funny gunplay humor, that's a win. And I mean, if you, especially for us, I think too, because that's right up our wheelhouse.
Yeah, I didn't see the original. I didn't see the 2017 movie. I didn't even know it existed, honestly, until this conversation. I just thought this was a completely new movie.
Until we just said this now, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, was it good? Was it?
I would venture to say that it on Rotten is around 50. I would say like roughly around there, maybe a little bit lower. If I had to guess. As far as critical reception goes, that is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's cool. It's actually entirely financed by Antonio Banderas cashing the Nasonex checks.
Wow,
43% critics, 67% okay, audience. That's close. Where do we have ours? Ken Jack, you had a 64 mm-hmm. out of 61, so we're kind of right around there. We're more on the audience side of things there. Hell yeah,
The Hitman's Bodyguard, cool poster,
entertaining. Yeah, it was entertaining. Yeah.
Wife's Bodyguard?
Trill, you can have another movie in a franchise. What franchise are you picking? Anyone, name it. Oh!
What, are we getting one?
Buddy, I have some good news for you. The Forever Purge.
Forever Purge.
No, you did
forever
the wrong song.
Forever Purge.
You're trying to Forever Young? Is that what the parody song was there?
No, but you're probably thinking I was going to do the Rod Stewart Forever Young, but I'm doing the Bob Dylan Forever Young.
Oh, okay.
You're doing right. The Bob Dylan.
I thought you were doing like the fucking Napoleon Dynamite Forever yeah. Young thing. Like,
no. And then there's also the one that the other Young Forever song. Like the one Jay-Z sampled.
Oh, okay.
That's one from Napoleon Dynamite, right?
Yeah, I think so.
No, I'm doing the Bob where that may God bless and keep you always. All right, go ahead.
Following the presidential elections from the last year and the abolition of the purge.
But that was the first purge. What happened to that? They skipped it.
I mean, good God. We're still doing that?
The funniest part about this is they're like, what if there was a purge outside of the purge? With bad guys. It's like, you mean like literally every single movie ever with bad guys just going around and killing people? That's what most of these movies are. If there's no purge, then there's no conceit. Now you're just completely doing away with the purge and you're just having people kill people outside the purge.
That's, sounds like this guy doesn't get the purge.
That's not the purge.
A Mexican. Yeah. Oh yeah. Some big purge fan you are. A Mexican couple escaping from a drug cartel is stranded on a Texas ranch. There, they will be at the mercy of a group of outsiders who plan to unlawfully continue their own purge.
So just do crime. They're just doing murder.
This isn't even the purge. There's just a,
yeah, just a crime story.
If it's murder all the time, it's not the purge. The thing that makes the purge, oh, also the voiceover in this one where it's like, all crime, including murder, is now illegal. It's like they had to throw that one in.
I like the idea of someone like, yo, have you seen the new purge? Like, dude, like they're committing crimes like outside of the purge. That's what makes it kind of like sick. It's like, so just any crime. Movie with just crime. Just
what they call crime.
It's normal crime.
Very regular crime, my friend. These movies got to end at some point, right? How much did the last Purge movie make? Well, the last one that, I don't know if the last one got released during COVID era, but like,
probably
election year. No, election. Was it election?
Was that
year?
The one with Tomei?
No, wasn't the first Purge, or was it Purge election year?
Purge election year was the last one, and that one really stunk.
Yeah. So no, this is a direct sequel to Purge election year. The previously released one was the first Purge, which was a prequel.
Have they done
that? Made $137 million off a $13 million budget. Election year made $118 million off a $10 million budget.
Fuck, man.
Anarchy made $112 million off a $9 million budget. The Purge made $89 million off a $3 million budget. And then the Forever Purge has the highest budget ever for the Purge, $25.8 million.
Yeah, I mean, it costs more to do murder outside of the Purge.
Yeah, so
yes, that's the problem.
How long do you think this before this is rebooted and just called Purge? Because they haven't done, it's always been the Purge. But
that is such a nice thing to have in their back pocket,
yeah,
huh?
Just Purge. You know they're going to do it.
They're going to replace the G with a 6 for the next one. That's my guess.
That rules, dude. Yes. This guy, we're taking all movie marketing back to 2011.
Yes. Just going fly like a G6.
Popping bottles in the
dun,
sky.
Dun, 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 dun. Tell me it doesn't get your blood flowing when you just hear those notes play.
Dude, I love that song. When Tayo Cruz comes on the speakers, I'm instantly transported back to
forget. I don't even know the places I used to go out to.
None of them have really particularly great Rotten Tomatoes scores. I would have expected at least the first Purge movie, not the literal first Purge, but like the Purge 2013 to be having like above a 39%.
Yeah, I've said it. I've said it often on this show. I've definitely said it on the show multiple times. Like, I do think the Purge is one of the more wasted premises.
Yeah.
Of like recent memory in terms of like something unique and different, because it was when you heard it, the idea, you're like, oh, that's fucking cool, like that's kind of horrifying, and then it never had the scale in the first one. I get like, again, $3 million budget, but it just felt, it just felt like confined to Ethan Hawke's house.
It likes to nudge you with the social commentary of like, you know, class awareness and things like that and how the Purge relates to it, but it never fully commits to that. And if it does, it doesn't go a step further in terms of like challenging the viewer. It just is kind of like, hey, like these people don't get the Purge because, you know, whatever. And then they like, you know, doesn't really resolve itself. I don't know. Wasn't that what the first, I forget. Like, I even forget anymore. I just remember them trying to do that. And then it's just like, they didn't fully commit to it. And therefore it just was a series of cool masks and people doing Purge crimes.
I forgot there was a TV show too. I completely forgot about that. There's a 2-season run on a TV show for this. Mm-hmm.
Purge Traders. two guys opening storage lockers after the Purge of people who we lost in the Purge.
Yep.
Fucking Purge, man. It's weird too, because like it is definitely going to get a reboot down the line, and they're gonna be like, no, we're gonna do Purge right this time. This is that we're gonna get it. Like almost like G.I. Joe. You know what I mean? I mean, like, we have something here. We can make it work. Let's get, like, one big actor. Because I think their big actors are, like, what, Ethan Hawke?
In the first Purge, I almost said. You have to be real careful about that. You can't do that.
Yeah, exactly. The chronologically first Purge. Don't make a movie called now the chronologically first Purge.
I think they're going to keep making these because this is the perfect movie to appeal to the teenage brain, I think.
Yeah, true.
It tickles the part of the teenage brain that I think is kind of curious about what ifs or like hypotheticals or alternate realities that.
Dude, you know how many times we did marry, fuck, kill when I was in high school? All the time. We loved hypotheticals.
Yeah, like for me, it was Masato, Ritsuku. who was a scientist?
Fuck, I don't remember. The names are just the name and
Ritsuku, I forget the blonde one.
Guess who the main one of the main producers rather on the Purge TV show was? Michael Bay.
I was gonna
Michael
say
Bay?
Chuck Lorre.
Michael Caine.
Purge. Oh, just love these Purge movies. Well, you know what crimes I would do when I was in the Purge.
Whatever the Purge, I locked myself in the attic.
Wank off me attic. You know, myself in the attic, have a wank to some duty free porn.
You know what I would do if like the Purge happened? I would simply just refuse to participate.
Yeah, what are they gonna do?
I'd be like, people, I'm not participating in the Purge.
It's not gonna do it. I wonder what there had to be limits to the actual Purge. Like, what did the government do during the Purge? They just hold up in like little castles.
Well, yeah, but that was one of
the they tell you in all the Purges. Yeah,
that was like one of the points of the, like all the rich people could afford to travel away.
No, not the rich people, but like the governments and shit.
One
like
and
that.
The same, my friend. In the person, yeah, in the universe, one and the same. And yeah, that in the Purge. So the commentary is that the Purge, you know, affected a class outside of the upper class, and. I you know, like I said, I don't think the filmmakers were apt enough in terms of like what they were trying to do in order their target audience to make something that actually was decent commentary. And so it just ended up being like people with masks doing Purge shit.
Parked in a handicap spot, I did.
They should just make a Purge multiplayer online game. That's just
Grand Theft Auto.
It's just Grand Theft Auto online. They just reskin it, and the whole game just takes place, you know, in the Purge.
The Ethan Hawke skin is going to be a must for that.
Yeah, I'm just role playing staying in the house.
Other random pieces of news. There's some clips of the Marvel shows. Nothing really worthy of talking about. Loki and Black Widow. I think there's a Hotel Transylvania one. The one little thing I do want to know before we get into our Zack Snyder interview, because we do have a lot to get to today, is Attack the Block. There's going to be an Attack the Block 2. John Boyega, that's like his first movie. If you've never seen Attack the Block, you got to rent it. It's a fucking awesome sci-fi alien movie. It's super British. It's a British movie. Attack the Block.
Great concept. Like all that, all those block movies that came out around that period, like even Dread from that, I think maybe the year previous to that, they're so fucking cool. And that is such innovative sci-fi, Attack the Block, and like has a cool blend of like comedy in it too, and like just horror elements. Very good movie. Very, very, you highly recommend that.
I'm actually looking forward to the new Hotel Transylvania. I know we skipped by that, but I've come around on the Hotel Transylvania franchise.
I would imagine you'd love those movies. I wouldn't imagine you ever disliked them.
I dislike them in the first place because on the surface level, it seems incredibly stupid. But like once you actually watch it, they're well-made movies that they're good to watch with a child, which is how I review children's movies these days. I would rather turn on Hotel Transylvania than watch Brave for the 465th time.
Why Brave out of all the movies?
Well, because you don't want to rewatch, you know, like Disney Plus. There's a whole lot of stuff on Disney Plus. If you think about the catalog of Pixar movies and you want to watch a kid's movie, the choices are, you want to go outside of the Disney realm, the Pixar universe sometimes. And sometimes you land on the Hotel Transylvania. Sometimes you land on the Croods. Mm. Sometimes you land on Rio, which the next time you interview Jesse Eisenberg, the entire conversation needs to be about Rio.
Just Rio.
And just ask him why Jermaine Clement basically played the same character in Moana that he does in the Rio movies.
Because you get away with it. They were great characters. The shiny song was also great.
Worth noting, HBO Max may be rolling in with Discovery Plus soon too. There was a bit of a merger with Warner that would add HGTV, Food Network, a lot of that stuff. I think the Learning Channel, TLC, with 90 Day Fiance.
Hell yeah. I can't get Big Ed off my TikTok timeline. It's frustrating me at this point. We found a video of him hanging out with Paulie Shore. Like, it was bizarre. That guy, I need him to go away.
We said it, though. The best was that he just ended up being an asshole.
Because then we can make fun of him. He sucks. He's such an asshole.
Dick. All right. We interviewed Zack Snyder. We talked about Army of the Dead, but we talked about many other things as well. Also, we got an interview with Patrick Wilson
that's right.
At the end of the month. We've interviewed almost everyone, I feel like.
It is crazy at this point. We're only missing a few.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Malin Ackerman, Patrick Wilson, now Zack Snyder. We've done a lot of the Watchmen folks. But here's our interview with the one, the only Zack Snyder.
All right, we are very excited. We've wanted to talk to you for quite a long time. Zack Snyder finally joined Lights, Camera, Barstool. How are you doing? This is crazy. I mean, have you released two big movies like this in such a short amount of time?
You know what? Nobody ever has, except for me. It seems crazy. When we were talking about it, we were talking about getting the movies ready. I was like, let's release Justice League and Army on the same day. And everyone's like, no, that's crazy. Stop that. And I was like, all right, fine. Well, how about the next week? No. I'm like, okay, how about a month later? Now you're getting warm. But we were ready. So just letting everything breathe a little bit, I think, is good.
That'd be a bad expectation for, I think, viewers to have. Be like, oh, well, Snyder's now the drop two movies on the same day guy. You don't want that.
That's true. That's cool.
All right. We're here to talk to you about Army of the Dead. Army of the Dead. We're super pumped for it. It's following a zombie outbreak. And this is our synopsis, so, I mean, if it's wrong, please correct us. Following a zombie outbreak in Las Vegas, a group of mercenaries take the ultimate gamble, venturing into the quarantine zone to pull off the greatest heist ever attempted. It's in select theaters on May 14th on Netflix, May 21st. Tell us, was that good? Was it okay?
That sounds like it. That's the movie.
That was it. Okay, no need to watch anymore. I'm canceling my tickets right now.
You nailed it.
This movie, though, and I want to ask off the top too, because my biggest disappointment, my only disappointment with Justice League, is that I had to watch it at home, and I just think that's obviously the time we're in right now. But it's kind of crazy because, like, what's happened since your cut of Justice League dropped? It's like we're almost in a different world. Not that, like, you know, the pandemic doesn't exist and like we can't just walk, but it is crazy. Like, I've been to movies since I watched that. And so now this one, like,
is it a little easier to encourage people now? Like, hey, if you can, definitely check this out, because we, I mean, we've loved the trailers and like 100%. It looks bright and crazy.
And it plays great in the theater. And I think it's a great, if you have a chance, it's really great to go see it. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch it.
Investment in film, you know, it's completely objective.
We're super pumped for it. We're super, super pumped for it. You know, it's funny. We talk about the zombie genre of film a lot just because it feels like not long actually after Dawn of the Dead came out, like the zombie sort of genre got oversaturated with a ton of movies, just went from 0 to 100,000 movies in the zombie subgenre. But now I feel like over the last roughly like 5-ish years, a lot of movies have taken some risks, done some unique things from within the genre to do even their own like value add on top of it. And yeah. Was that something like on your mind when you were coming up for the idea?
Absolutely. You know, I thought, okay, I've done one unique zombie film. If I'm doing a second unique zombie film, I can, you know, at least I know the rules, so I can break them a little bit. But you know, that's all sliding scales. You know, you just try and, you know, in this film we have, you know, classic shamblers, and then we have these alphas that are, you know, sort of evolved. And I think that's a fun, it really is a fun little kind of aside that we take with them.
We're excited for that. And also, you kind of did it all for this, right? You directed, produced, right? You're a cinematographer as well. Is it like hard to shoulder that?
Yeah. I mean, look, the hardest part is, you know, look, my wife is my producing partner, and she is incredibly capable. And, you know, when I say I was a producer, I guess, you know, I was in the meetings. You know, but she does all the work really in that arena. But, you know, filming the movie, like physically holding the camera and shooting the movie is arduous but really fun. And I really had a great time doing it. It's weirdly more immersive. And so, you know, the days went by super fast, but I feel like we got so much done.
My favorite movie of all time is Ocean's 11. I'm a massive, massive Las Vegas. I just love Las Vegas. It's a place I love going. I love looking at. That has to be such a fun. Now, obviously, like, I know you've done like a lot of the shooting was done in Atlantic City, other places, but just the palette of Las Vegas has to be such a crazy thing to work with.
It's insane because we had to build a giant 3D model of Las Vegas, and we had the entire thing. And we were talking about yesterday, like, I haven't been back to Vegas since we made the movie, but I've been through the model so many times that I was like, I could walk this strip with my eyes closed, with a blindfold. I know it so well. It's weird. I feel like I've spent like 2 years there. It's really fun.
Are there other any other Vegas to like this inspire you in the back of your head? Like, maybe there's something else I can do with the city, because I feel like there's a lot of Vegas movies, but it's not like a crazy amount. I'm not compared to like New York or L.A., and it's such a like mystical place.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I guess like Vegas in space, Vegas underwater, Vegas. It's Vegas, but it's a huge transformer, and it turns into like who knows? I mean, I think you're right. Clearly, there's a lot of things we could do.
Another big ensemble cast for you too, which is the norm these days. Not that like it was invented recently, but I feel like you've got to just have it down as good as anybody how to make these movies work, right?
I don't know what's the matter with me. Like, I just feel like every time I make a movie, it's like, okay, we got to make the team. We're going to put this team together and we're going to do this thing. And I really want to do a movie like with one. I mean, I guess Man of Steel is like kind of one guy, but and that was fun. But yeah, it's kind of I really want to do a movie like with one guy. It's just like, I'm just me, and I don't have a team at all. I don't have any team. It's like the anti-team movie, like where he's like walking around, like people are like, join a team. He's like, fuck you. He's like, crack, you know, get away from me. You know, that'd be cool. But I got incredibly lucky. This cast is literally amazing. They're great people, amazing actors. They have incredible diversity, international. It's just this, I couldn't ask for a better group. But yeah, it was, you got to give everybody their moments. They all got to like, their arcs have to be completed. You know, every act, every sort of character has to have a sort of complete, you know, I had to have complete vision for like where they came from and where they were going. So yeah, it's a lot of work, but you know, I think these are the kind of movies that's perfect, you know, like the,
you got a lot of options for who to kill, you know.
So. Yeah. Yes, exactly. And how hard is it though? Like,
not like Justice League, where like you know, like a lot of these guys aren't going to make it. You know, mm-hmm. like, you look at the cast of Justice League, you're like, which one of these guys is going to die? You're like, well,
it's not exactly Suicide Squad. I think, yeah,
any of them. maybe.
What is that like, though, splitting up like the characterization when you have so many? Because like that is like the fascination now. It's like throwing in all the Justice, like all the Avengers, all this, all that. But like you have to split it up in a way that's mildly digestible, right? Like, does it get to a point where you're like, ah.
Well, I think that the way I do is I just, you know, become a little bit, because character and story have to kind of like, they have to mesh up. So, you know, whatever's happening, whatever journey that the character needs to go on, it's also has to like hook up with what needs to happen for the story to work, you know? So if it's your safe cracker, he has to be able to open the safe maybe before he is, whatever is going to happen to him that's not good or something like that, you know? And like, if he's going to learn a valuable lesson about who he is as a character, it might have to happen either in the moment that he's about to open the safe so that that revelation allows him to do it, or it might have to happen the moment after so that you're like, you've learned your lesson of life, but the irony is that you're not going to get to continue. So these are the kind of things. And I'm not saying that either of those happen. I'm just saying that those are the kind of things that could happen.
Noted. Yeah.
We're super pumped to watch it, though. Like you mentioned, the cast is insane. We're really excited for it. We also want to talk to you about some of your other stuff. Before we move on, though, one last note on Army of the Dead, and it's that I hate you because I despise the idea of fast zombies. And now, because you had fast zombies in Dawn, but now they're fast and they're smart. And that's just a scenario that I despise because there's no way. Slow zombies, I might survive. But fast and smart zombies, I'm fucking dead.
As a matter of fact, I think beyond not surviving, there's a really good chance that these zombies are just going to replace the entire human race. And,
yeah.
Just be their own sort of benevolent. And they're also, they're kind of really cool in a lot of ways because like they're not fucking up the environment. They're not murdering each other. They're not really that ambitious. They're kind of happy to be in Vegas. They're not trying to get out and murder everyone. They're just like, but you know, of course the people, the humans get in there and fuck the whole thing up and make them super mad, piss them off, do shitty stuff to them. When you see what they do and why they get mad, you're going to be like, all right, fuck those people.
So we're going to be team zombie by the end of this? Oh no, it's very store friendly. Don't worry.
Okay, cool. Yeah, but it's like, you're just like, those guys, they deserve whatever they get now. That was not cool.
Let's talk a little bit. May 14th in theater and select theaters, May 21st on Netflix, Army of the Dead. Yeah. We're very excited to see it. Snyder Cut, though, I do want to talk about it a little bit. We were...
Sure.
I mean, it was a really cool moment to hit play on that thing. That, for you, has there ever been kind of like... I don't know what the process is, like a submit. Like, I don't know what that was. But when that finally, like, left your hands and was, like, into the world, that had to be a sigh of relief like you've never felt before. It had to be up there.
Well, look, it's unprecedented. No one – this has just never really happened to anybody. No one even knows what this – you know, even the people involved, we don't even know what happened exactly. So, yeah, it was a really cool moment. It's like, you know, I posted that – that one thing on Vero about the, you know, it is the doom of men that they forget, you know, from Excalibur, mm-hmm. because I really, you know, I really felt like it was like some kind of seminal moment that we all had to mark and see, at least in our minds, because it was pretty crazy that it all happened. It's funny because, you know, in Army, I have those, I put the Snyder Cut canisters, and we were laughing the other day about how the fact that when I did that, we had... there was no chance the movie was coming out. There was no chance that Justice League would happen. Hmm. And now we're post Justice League coming out and the canisters mark some sort of moment in history, mm-hmm. where like those, where that movie was in a vault somewhere and never to be seen. It's kind of crazy.
The aspect ratio is one of the things we liked it. I mean, that's our thing. I see movies. We see IMAX all the time. We're very lucky. We have one of the best IMAX in the world here in Manhattan in our Lincoln Square Theater. Yeah. So, for us, great. But you had, I feel like just some of the response had at times that you had to be like, oh, geez, people are like, why does it look like this? What's up with the
My TV's broken.
I'm like, honestly, go There's a thing called the internet. Look up aspect ratio. It's not that hard.
they had to put a warning on it on HBO. They're like, this is what an aspect ratio is. Here's a definition.
Oh, I know. I was like, okay, if you guys want to do that, by all means, go nuts. If you want to, you know, because like my thing is like, I mean, not to be, you know, you get to the point where you're like, okay, do you really want me to like change the aspect ratio? Is that a thing you want me to do? Because you don't like, you're fine looking at a movie with black bars on the top and bottom, but not on the sides.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it's so
now,
true.
Somehow with the black bars are on the sides, you're like, your mind explodes. You're like, I can't look at it that way. Your fucking phone is a square. You look at Instagram every day. Like, what is the matter with you? Just enjoy the movie. Quit asking mm-hmm. about the ass. I agree 100%. I was like, really? I said that one thing to that one guy. I think I commented one time. The guy was like, he was like, no more 133. And I was like, 133 is awesome. Don't be a sheep. And then I saw this meme like it all took off about like, don't be a sheep. 133, don't be a sheep. You know, like, oh my God. It's pretty funny. But look, I just want people to enjoy the movie. Even in its square format. You know, the other day, my friend watched the movie and he was mad about it. He was like, this is stupid. I hate this. This is my friend, by the way. I hate this square fucking aspect ratio. This is so bad. And then like halfway through the movie, he's like, I'm starting to like this square aspect ratio. What are you doing to me? No, I think
we liked it a bunch. I remember something that we'd heard about it is that it was initially supposed to be put out into the 6 episodes, right? Or was it 4 episodes? And then they switched it. Why the change to the movie?
It was 4.
Okay, so why the change to a movie instead of it being episodic?
Literally, the lawyers were like, you can't release it that way because then everyone has to, like, we have no contracts for a TV show, you know, with the actors. That's like, you have contracts for a movie, gosh. But not for a TV show. And I was like, oh, I don't want. And then they're like, we're going to, it's going to be some legal press. It's going to go to the Supreme Court. And I was like, okay, forget it. I have enough problems with the movie right now. I don't need that. Like, court order.
I can't even imagine you just like, after all of this, you finally have like, hey, you got to go to Washington. You got to go to Supreme Court.
The movie.
Testifying at Congress.
There's been an injunction against the film. By the way, the fans would have lost their minds. They would have stormed the Capitol.
It would have been you testifying at Congress for it.
That wouldn't have been the most perfect ending to this, but just like for all like everything, like if you would have told me, like if I would have like went to sleep for 10 years and been like, hey, whatever happened to the Snyder Cut, like, oh, and then in the Supreme Court, I'd have been like, that makes sense. That just like that seems like the perfect.
Well, yeah, that's right. That's what the Snyder Law is about. That's where it came
from. Yeah. The Snyder rule, just like the Tuck rule.
Like you can't do that because of the Snyder precedent. Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, Snyder v. U.S. I remember that one. Yeah, remember that from law. So I want to get your thoughts on this because I want to form a coalition of directors. It would be you. It would be Ridley Scott. It would be James Cameron. And the goal is to destroy studio red tape so that directors can always get their original version out. And we would call it a cut above society.
I thought about society. Wow. Quite a
you like it.
Highfalutin group. Yeah, no, it sounds cool. Like, where do I sign to be part of
this? As soon as I find out the rights to make it so that I get all of the money for it, we're good. I'll send the contracts immediately and you won't be in trouble. You won't have to go to court or testify to Congress this time. I promise.
I can promise everything's going to be fine. No, listen, it's funny too because I think that, you know, there is this, you know, history now, you know, this whatever this is, like where these embattled sort of movie directors are fighting for their movie. And I know that it's sounds exhausting, but, you know, it really I think the one thing with Justice League is you can compare the two movies and say, like, OK, I get why. I guess someone came up to me the other day and was like, that was uncool. And I was like, what? And they were like, that was uncool, bro. And I was like, what was uncool? I literally had no idea what you're talking about. And like, I saw the other version. Like I hadn't seen it. I watched your movie. Then I went back and watched it. I'd never seen it. I saw it. That was uncool. What the movie that they made. And I was like, I go, I haven't seen it yet. He goes, don't watch it. I go, no, I know. I've heard not to watch it.
It's incredible. Like,
he was really upset. He was like, I got to tell you, man, I was like, freaked out by that. And I was like, okay, well, I go, well, you know, I'm not going to watch it. He goes, don't ever. I was like, okay. So, but I just think that it's weird to have the, like, that both are out there. I mean, look, you just saw they released that crazy trailer the other day for the old version of the movie. Did you see that? Like, Warner Brothers released a trailer a couple days ago, or like as last week, for the theatrical version of Justice League. They just thought, oh, we're going to drop the 4K version of the trailer.
Now it's like new Coke for them. It's new Coke to Coke. Yeah. It's basically, yeah.
But it literally, if you go look at it, it literally has 100,000 downvotes on the.
That's amazing.
It has 100,000 downvotes. I'm like, I've never seen that. I don't know if that's ever happened in history. I think it's like over 110,000 downvotes now. I did something crazy, but.
There were a couple moments where, like, in watching it, like, to the credit of the guy who stopped you, were you watching? Because, like, I mean, we won't lie. When we first heard about this, when this whole thing, we were, like, skeptical. You're like, really? Like, is there a cut? Is this? And then you watch it, and, like, to your credit, I was like, got it. A couple moments in, especially probably, like, kind of the chase of Steppenwolf, the Amazonians, like, you're like, okay. You're like, you get it. You're like, I see, like, you kind of see the difference. You see, like, how much different of a movie and what your vision was, to your credit.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Absolutely there.
But kind of fun. I mean, in some way.
Right? Probably. But director's cut, it was a thing long before this. Like, you've had cuts. Like, I mean, obviously, I know you say not to watch the ultimate cut of Watchmen because the Black Sails stuff isn't complete. Is that you say to watch the director's cut? Is that right?
Oh, look, by the way, watch all of – that's my personal favorite is just the straight director's cut, and then watch the Black Sail by itself. But the inner cut version, it's fine. I mean, it's really – that's really the graphic novel on steroids. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's just – it wasn't designed exactly that way. That's why. I mean, it worked, but it wasn't – I didn't intend – that was the thing that came to me after and said, oh, we can do this – sort of animated version. And I was like, oh, that's cool. But I wasn't, if I'd known we were going to do that, I might've approached it in a slightly different way.
But like, it's kind of funny because again, director's cut existed. You've had this before, but it's almost like the word Snyder cut is like its own, like the word, like the use of gate for Watergate, like everything's spy gate. And for like everything now is like director's name cut. Like that's what everyone said, everything. Like you see that with the Ayers cut of Suicide Squad, which was trending yet again today. Like you truly have started a movie where there's always like the blank cut of everybody's movie. Now it's like, there's gotta be the blank cut. You're the cut guy now. That's like gate, except better. I think this is better than Watergate. Personally,
it is a little bit better to be associated with this than Watergate. Thanks for that. I appreciate that. Cause I don't want to, you know,
are there other cuts? Like I know our fan, is there a Gahul cut, a Snyder cut? Like there other?
Okay, I will say that there is a Gahul cut. It's true because we had the dead parents. We had, you know, because the movie when I signed on was like, okay, it's a movie about sort of, it's a metaphor for the civil rights movement. And we had like Down by the River as the song, you know, and it was like really, you know, the song that was replaced with the song who sang that song? It's the doo-doo, the song where they're learning to fly in the middle of the movie. I can't remember off the top of my head. Anyway, that was like this really cool, you know, civil rights anthem. It was really important to me that like, this is a great opportunity to teach, you know, because the pure ones and then like, you know, all of the other owls that are just normal are like being, you know, they're being like moon blinked and like, you know, made to like just pick through these pellets. Meanwhile, like, you know, the pure ones are like forcing everyone into submission like Nazis. And so, yeah, so there was like, you know, but they were like, okay, this is like a little. and then like when Soren goes back, his parents have been murdered. So there was like a little bit more, it was a little bit tougher, you know, the movie. Well,
you know, we wrote that question almost like as like a joke to this, the cut verse. But now all I want to see is the Guardians of Gahul Snyder cut. So now we're going to start a brand new movement. Like Gahul cut.
And then also Sucker Punch, you know, we never got it all the way. Like we have a big.
That I believe.
There's a very, you know, I've talked about that. And we have talked about, you know, I was like, you know, the only reason I haven't done like the complete version of Sucker Punch as a director's cut, like really done it, is because what happens is they've sold the rights to all these different territories and they got to wait for those rights to expire before we can take it back and fix it. Because what happens is the value of that. So if I sign a contract with you and be like, oh, I'm going to show your thing, and then you release that same thing over here that's different and maybe better, mine now suddenly doesn't have the value that it had when I bought it from you. Yeah. So people get mad about that sort of thing.
More contract. We're just have to get you in front of Washington as like a whole thing. Like, what, you get everything out of the way all at once.
Yeah.
Another movie of yours I want to talk about really quick, because, and this is the last thing we're going to talk about, it's one of my favorite movies. It's my middle school anthem movie, I would say, and that's 300. And 300, I loved growing up.
Yeah.
Love it so much. And we have to ask you, and Jeff's going to show you a movie right now. We need to know if you have seen it before. Can you show it up?
Oh, yeah. Meet the Spartans, of course.
Yes.
By the way, if you want to measure your success, if there's a full movie parody of your movie, your movie did pretty cool. Your movie it hits the zeitgeist, as they say. Must have hit it. Someone thought they could make money from a parody of the movie that you made. So that's pretty.
I mean, we got Shrek on here, Ghost Rider, Spider-Man. They put Howie Mandel, Simon.
Brittany shaving her head at one point. Kevin Federline is in that.
Yeah. But that's not the one with the. That one does have this sort of stomp the yard breakdancing sequence
yes.
in it.
Yes. 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 Yeah. I'm assuming you saw that in theaters.
I think they actually made two parody movies of 300.
Did they really?
Yeah, and I was like,
We own it.
You got to stop. But that's cool. That's pretty cool.
Thank you so much. We didn't even get to – I mean, we could talk Watchmen for hours and hours.
Yeah, that's another show. We'll do that show.
So, hey, anytime you're free, we'd love to talk to you some more. Army of the Dead, if you can, see it in theaters. We will be seeing it in theaters.
It'd be great, too.
Watch it again on Netflix. Mm-hmm. How about that?
Literally – because let me just say, there's all these crazy Easter eggs in the movie. Oh, it was my phone, but it's fine. There's all these crazy Easter eggs in the movie. There's going to be some stuff you're like, what? Did that just? Oh, I got to go home.
And now watch it on Netflix and catch it.
I got to run home, turn it on again, and be like, I was right. Look at that. Are you kidding me? What is the matter with Snyder? He's insane.
I love that. Love that.
Thank you so much. This was a blast. Hope to talk to you again. Good luck.
Awesome, brother.
Thank you so much.
Cheers, guys.
All right. Thanks to Zack Snyder. That was so – I would say they're fun. But that was set up as a junket. Like, so he was in junket mode. We didn't have, like, the normal short junket time, though. We had the full, like, 25, 30 minutes. So I didn't – I think he thought we might be, like, very junkety. And not that we became best friends by the end of it, but I appreciate that you could tell when we started doing, like, the Gahool mm-hmm. talk and, like, meet the Spartans at the – towards the end, he kind of – he got it. We weren't there just to be like, all right, well, what about Green Lantern?
Yeah, he understood.
Like, Zach, I don't know why I'm making him Zach, sound like Rage Free.
When you did Hallelujah in the credits, was that a fuck you to people criticize you for Watchmen? Have you heard this question before, Zach?
You know, he's cool, though. It was funny, the Gahool thing, mostly just because, like, we said it obviously as a joke, but him just being, oh, yeah, there's a Gahool cut. Like, very he's like, seriously. Oh, yeah,
there's a serious Gahool cut. It's very dark, too.
I want to see it so bad. Yeah. I want to know what it is. It's got to be hidden somewhere in the WB lot.
Didn't even really get to talk Watchmen as much as we wanted to, but we just ran out.
Talked to Patrick Wilson about it, though, so get ready for that.
We did, yeah. Patrick Wilson, that interview will be at the end of the
27
month.
Minutes about his appearance on Girls, 3 minutes on Watchmen.
He was on Girls? I don't remember that.
Yeah, he was on Girls.
Oh, you know why? It's because I never watched that. That's why.
I liked Girls. I will defend the first few seasons of Girls. I think it was a decent show.
Okay, those who wish me dead. Taylor Sheridan. We'll talk about the movie and then we'll get into some Taylor Sheridan. Because I do want, there's a couple of things brought up. Our audience got really deep into the weeds on this movie in terms of like reviews and thoughts. So we'll read some of those. Still reeling from the loss of three lives. Hannah is a smoke jumper who's perched in a watchtower high above the Montana wilderness. She soon encounters Connor, a skittish boy who's bloody, traumatized, and on the run in the remote forest. As Hannah tries to bring him to safety, she's unaware of the real dangers to follow. Two relentless killers hunting Connor, and a fiery blaze consuming everything in its path. Finn Little plays the boy. Angelina Jolie's in the lead role. Nicholas Hoult, Aidan Gillen, John Bernthal, Tyler Perry is in it. Taylor Sheridan directed the movie. Taylor Sheridan also helped write the movie. He directed only one of his other movies, Wind River.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that. We'll talk about that at the end. He also definitely directed either all or some episodes of Yellowstone. I don't have that in front of me, but I know he did.
He's a showrunner.
Yeah, he's been, yeah, it's a show. Didn't do Hell or High Water. Didn't do Sicario, and didn't do Sicario 2, which is, up to this point, the stinker of the bunch for him. Even though some people, I think, liked it more. I wouldn't even call it a stinker. It was very mediocre at best, I think, for most people. Ken Jack, I'll start with you. Those Who Wish Me Dead, on HBO Max, also in theaters. I feel like all three of us have... Actually, I have no idea what true. You and I definitely have a similar opinion on this one, Ken Jack.
Yeah, I feel like it's a frustrating movie to watch because, like, we know what Taylor Sheridan is capable of, and this movie just doesn't feel like it used, or it didn't feel like it lived up to the potential it had, because, you know, we saw what he could do with Wind River when he directs and writes at the same time. We saw what he can do when he writes by himself, and now it's like we expected maybe, I think, a step back up, but this movie just, it felt like it didn't really play to his strengths because he's just like a really, really good storyteller from what we know from, like, his entire Frontier trilogy. It was great developing characters that don't have, like, too many frills or too much, like, you know, out loud exposition shit. It's mostly done through just like action and environment and story and like visual storytelling almost. And this movie just didn't feel like it was Sheridan quality at all. It felt like imitation Sheridan, you know, like getting some imitation crab or whatever. Not that I'll be able to physically tell the difference between the two, but like it didn't have the elements that I expected it to, and it just hurt. There was a lot of like I think the look of a Sheridan movie, like The Frontier, was definitely there. It's all in like Montana, or if I believe, you know, that visual style was definitely cool. And like the Western sort of standoffs that you have throughout it, very Sheridan-esque. But the dialogue was really weird. I don't think they built up any of the characters particularly well. There wasn't really enough tension, really, for especially when you consider some of the moments that he's weaved into, you know, Sicario, Wind River, Hell or High Water. And just, I didn't care particularly for any of the characters too much. And there was a lot of like teases, I feel like, throughout this movie of people that like, it just didn't pay off. Like, why did they introduce the Tyler Perry character? Okay. I have no fucking clue.
Okay, let me just say this. Are we in spoilers?
Yeah, let's just do a straight. Let's just say straight spoilers now,
because I do think.
Yeah, because we're on it's on HBO Max too.
I would have added 5 points to this movie if Tyler Perry's character was getting out of one of those FBI cars at the end. I'm serious, because
it would have been cool.
The movie was like, it missed that big, it missed some gut punch. But I'm just saying, like, the Tyler Perry character should have come back, and he should have just been inside the system. Like, that would have, I felt like that would have at least left you with a feeling of dread in the ending that it just, and anyway, sorry to interrupt.
It just would have made more sense. And it sucks. It's like, I don't think any of this is particularly any of the actor's fault. Like, I think Nick Hoult is big enough where he doesn't need to do a role this small anymore. Like, Aidan Gillen, I think, properly cast, but I think it was kind of a waste of Hoult. John Bernthal, I feel like, could have done a little bit more. Like, Angelina Jolie, I will say, absolutely still has it as like an action star. I think she's really good in this. The kid actor, also pretty good. I just think they didn't develop any particular character strong enough. And that was always something I really liked about Sheridan's stories in his other movies. Again, you look at Jeremy Renner in Wind River. You look at even like Elizabeth Olsen in Wind River. You look at Chris Pine in Hell or High Water. You look at Emily Blunt in Sicario. Like, she always has at least one character that he manages to flesh out beyond like a face level. And just it wasn't here. Like, the most, I feel like, characterization we got for Angelina Jolie or Hannah is just like those flashbacks to those moments over and over again. And it felt cliche. It didn't really feel like him. And that just, it definitely hurt my absorption of this movie a lot. And I just ended up giving it 70. Although I will say, theater experience on this way better than, I watched it in theaters and then watched it at home. Theater experience was significantly better.
Have you ever seen the South Park with the wood shop teacher, the shop teacher, where he keeps having the flashbacks, which are like live action of like his wife dying?
I feel like I vaguely remember which
the flashbacks in this one kind of remind me of that. Like, I don't think the flashbacks were very well done. I just, and they're so frequent. Like, you kind of almost like, I don't know. I understand flashbacks. Like, there is characterization. Like, you're trying to bring the audience up to speed with this character's past trauma, which was significant for this character, but it almost like, it just seemed like it was handled like a 90s movie. You know, it didn't seem modern. It seemed very dated.
And that's my weird thing about it. So I'll just say my score quick, then I'll give it back to you, Trill. that's almost being used as like an excuse by some, which is odd to me. Like, they're like, oh, this has like such, well, people are saying 2000s, they're like, it's like an early 2000s movie. I'm like, yeah, but the way that people are saying that, it's like kind of a defense, but it's definitely being tossed in as a negative because maybe he intentionally did that, but that's not what his other movies are like. And that would kind of, wouldn't that seem like kind of a weird, like, departure from what he usually does?
And I mean, he's also done, like, I know it's not the exact same thing, but like the...
By the way, my score, sorry, it's a 62. That may be unfair. I do want to go see it again because I wasn't in, like, I watched it at home. I agree with Ken Jack, probably a better movie, a theater movie. So I'm going to see, but that could be harsh, but I'm sticking with a 62 for now. So Troll could continue. Well,
I mean, and it's like he did the flashbacks with in Wind River with Bernthal's character and the victim. Like, so he has like kind of played with taking things back in time in the movies, like, and I know it's not a one-for-one comparison, but like in Wind River, I mean, as brutal and graphic and harrowing as that scene was, like, it's hard to compare it to this one. It just didn't feel it didn't feel like you were able to I don't think it did Angelina Jolie's character enough justice in terms of, you know, kind of bringing the viewer up to speed with like everything she'd gone through, is like, I guess what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it was also just, I don't think the bad guys are like intimidating enough. The Aidan Gillen and Nicholas Hoult characters, because like there was 100 points throughout this movie where they could just kill the person and been on their way. You know what I mean? And like they did it once, I think, where like you get away with just saying like, oh, well, we need them to find this or we need them to find that. You can't just keep letting the good guys live and then escape and then attack you again and then rinse, repeat over and over and over again. It got to the point where it was almost like Austin Powersy, you know? And it's just like, these guys are just dumb people. And I now no longer have like respect or fear for them as main villains in this.
Well, and the thing is, so I'll put the movie, like, there's three separate categories of what happens in this movie. There's Angelina Jolie's story with Connor, right? There's Nicholas Hoult and Aidan Gillen's, you know, tracking. And then there's John Bernthal's arc. And I actually thought the Aidan Gillen and Nicholas Hoult like arc was a lot more entertaining than the other two. The thing about it is, like, the biggest complaint I have is I love John Bernthal, but I think he was underutilized in this movie. I don't know. Like, they should have made his wife or girlfriend, played by Medina Singhor, like, more. I mean, she was awesome. Like make her the main character or something. Like, because I know Bernthal has to be in it, but it just didn't seem like, yeah, the best example of this, right, is, and this is where I kind of felt like it didn't feel like a Taylor Sheridan movie in terms of like what we're used to with Hell or High Water, is when it was very Taylor Sheridan-y when he went off and just said, just kill me now, right? John Bernthal, he's like, okay, just kill me now, just get it over with. And I feel like at that point they should have just killed him. Like, yeah. And that would have been a big shock to the audience, or like, I mean, kind of surprising in the moment, and kind of just an abrupt end to his character arc. And like, by letting him leave like that, that's like where it kind of felt like a 90s movie, where it's just like these two assassins just become progressively less adept at being an assassin throughout the movie, which ends in some fucking horrible dialogue where he's like, I hate this place. And she's like, it hates you too. Like, that's not good, man. That just wasn't good. So the whole thing kind of felt like, me, like, it felt like that first time you get your flag football team together and like everybody's just trying to like play quarterback or run different positions and nobody really feels set. It feels the same way, where you have like great actors but nobody really is playing that deep or relatable or intriguing enough of a character for the audience to do anything with. Except I thought this movie had some of the best kid acting, with Finn Little playing Connor, that I've seen in a while. Like, I thought he did a fantastic job, especially with kind of like the weight of his character and watching his dad die. Like, I thought he was really good, but like, I feel like everybody else, it just didn't feel like they were utilized, or it didn't feel like the story was written around them enough to make them like three-dimensional. It just felt really two-dimensional. Yeah. It felt really flat. The whole movie felt flat.
it felt like nobody's fault on the cast either. Like you're saying, like it was really what they had to work with. And I see this a lot, like just scanning through our audience's reactions, reviews, many people noting like this movie needed like another hour. Almost like this movie felt like it had no bones to it. Like there were no meat. Like the bones were there. There was really no meat though. And by the time you get to the end of it, you feel like, man, like a lot of that was really empty, unearned, hollow, missing. Like those are the words that I'm seeing a lot thrown around here. I love this comp. Chairman Pete said it was obvious from the trailer that this is going to be a load of crap. And it felt like it came from 2008 and could have been starring Mark Wahlberg. That's a great guy. I think that's a fantastic like analysis right there. That's very true.
Well, I mean, even in the cabin confrontation, and this is where, you know, things were set up to feel Sheridan-y, but it didn't feel right. Like there wasn't a sense of dread in that cabin confrontation where they're interrogating her. And it didn't fill me with like the same dread as something like Wind River, where I've, you know, that movie felt like my stomach was just in my feet for the entire.
Why are you flanking 100. Scene mean? I mean, come on, that scene is crazy. There's so much tension. There's just not a lot of tension in this at all. It felt like they could have done this movie with one or two less characters and it would have been significantly better because they would have had a chance to flesh them out. Like if they removed the Angelina Jolie character and that entire backstory and all that arc, it would have been just as good just having, like, let's say John Bernthal escaping or his wife escaping with the kid. You know what I mean? And if it was just those two and that was the story and like they were trying to reunite while also helping this kid, I think this would have been a significantly better movie because there was a split focus between all these people and none of them got the justice they deserved.
Yeah. I mean, and again, it's based on the book. So I don't know how much it deviated from the book. I normally read up on the book's plot or like at least read comments from people saying, well, this is where the movie differed, but I didn't really do that for this. So like, I don't know what was written in the book or what, you know, what was changed and if it was for better or for worse. The only like, and I feel like I feel like the acting was fine. The only thing is like, I love Aidan Gillen. I felt like that role would have been instantly improved by Sam Rockwell. Like just, and like, yeah, I know like that's like saying, well, why doesn't the team just draft Michael Jordan or whatever? I think like Aidan Gillen, like, he was great in this, but I don't think his presence, I don't think he was as menacing as he could have been. Like, I think it started off strong. And that was the big complaint is like,
I agree.
The two assassins progressively became dumber. And maybe part of it was just them being overwhelmed by everything collapsing around them or getting into a situation they can't control. But like part of the intimidation factor of having those like assassins come after you is they can handle everything. And so by the time you get to the end with like Jack Blackwell, which I didn't even know his name until I read the summary, Aidan Gillen's character getting shot. And then you have like Angelina Jolie taking down Nicholas Holt with an axe. You weren't really like, oh, like great. Like those assholes are dead. You're just kind of like, okay, like this. They're just moving it along. Cause there's a whole scene where she's behind a tree. Just walk around the tree. You have a gun. You have a gun. Like, I hate to go all cinema sins, but like, that's the thing is like, if you commit yourself to like this genre of movie and you're trying to build up these, you know, assassin characters or people who are really adept at like this line of work, like you have to, you can't make them stupid because that takes you out of it. Cause that makes you less afraid of them.
Yeah, it just definitely needed something extra. And like Nicholas Holt is a guy I definitely buy as a villain because you've seen him do stuff like that before and seen him play very twisted and messed up characters. But I think just the physical presence of Aidan Gillen isn't that scary. Like he's obviously very great in like stuff like Game of Thrones where like he can play someone that's more conniving and mysterious in that sense. But like just physically scary wasn't really particularly a strong suit for him. And I liked a lot of the other characters in this. Like, you know who I'd love to have seen more from was the sheriff with the handlebar mustache that was complaining about his wife. Give me more about that guy. That guy is that's a Taylor Sheridan character right there. The guy's like, you got a call from your wife. You want to take it? Absolutely not. As go back to eating a steak at 10 a.m. That's a Taylor Sheridan guy.
I think I wrote this steak back in the 70s.
Yeah,
I mean that's good dialogue. Like that's the Sheridan dialogue we know and love.
But exactly.
Then you have the "I hate this place." Like fucking, that's the '90s movie coming out of it. Like the catchphrase.
I'm still trying to keep my dog from barking, but I want to backtrack to the Aidan Gillen thing. Aidan Gillen has such a distinct demeanor that fits like very few characters, and when he's there, he does it well. But I agreed. This one just didn't seem perfect. Yeah.
And I didn't mind him, and I didn't mind that he was like less physically imposing either, because I actually think like this is kind of scarier when you see an assassin who's like more out of shape than his like 30-year-old counterpart or whatever. I think there was such a breakdown in the character by the end that I don't want to take anything away from him, but like the whole time I kept saying like, man, it'd be so fucking menacing if it was Sam Rockwell. Cause it is like, it is just that, like, it's that calm collectedness that was scary about the Aidan Gillen character, the first two thirds of the movie. But then they started getting like home alone. Like they got Harry blowtorched and started getting beat up. And then it's like, they forgot how to do assassinations. And
you wanted him to be Mr. Right.
The lightning scene, by the way, was one
that
of the
was
more
absurd.
Absurd. And I hate to do the cinema sins, but this is it. Like when you see absurd stuff, you're like, this is stupid. This is fucking stupid. And that was stupid.
And it's weird too, because like that's something that maybe like in the frontier makes sense, and that's something you gotta do or whatever like that. Like I don't know that. And like when I'm watching this, it just looks stupid and I don't get it. And that's might just 100% be on me, but you need to do a little bit of a better job explaining what the fuck we're looking at, because it just looks dumb.
But let me tell you what I did like. I mean, there were scenes I did like. That I liked the fire tower scene where they're tracking John Bernthal with the sniper rifle, and like, why? Like, I thought that was one of the few scenes that kind of had tension to it. And in your mind, you're thinking like, how's he going to get out of this? And I was doing that. So, I mean, I think there were things, look, as I know we've been shitting all over it, and part of it is because expectations were higher for me for this movie, and I don't know why. I mean, partially, obviously, because Taylor Sheridan's attached, but then, you know, Angelina Jolie's on it too. I just don't think the story did a service to it. But I think there are some enjoyable parts of it. It just, when everything comes together, it's disconnected. It's kind of messy. It's two dimensional, and overall, it's just not a very, it's not up to standards in terms of what we expect.
That's the biggest problem, and I think that might be an issue with us viewing it, is that everything is relative with Sheridan, and for Sheridan to be responsible, I think, for a lot, at least for us three of our more favorite movies of the last decade, and to go from that to this, it's a little bit of a disappointment. And again, that's not to say like this guy has been on like a slump or something, because with this and Sicario, like he's been doing Yellowstone this entire time. Yellowstone's absolutely fantastic. He's working on other stuff too. He's fucking boss man, and this is again an adaptation of something else that he co-wrote with the writer of that, and I believe someone else. So there's a lot of factors going into this, and again, plenty of stuff to love in this as well. I like he's always been good, I think, at making gunplay look a little bit more realistic, with the exception of the tree scene in this, and I think he made it look scary, and just, he's really, really good at violence, and I think just standoffs in general. The scene where they're sniping in the tower, the scene where they have the standoff with the sniper rifle versus Aidan Gillen, and just a lot of moments that just, it works really well. This just was not one of them. Even the scene where like they ambush the dad and drive him off the road, and then like they kill that random lady that like drives up. Like that was legitimately kind of scary. And then it never really found its footing. I think it was like a house with no foundation, right? Like there's just it was just nothing to stand on by the end of this movie. And just, there was no moment where you're like, oh yeah, that was a Sheridan movie there. That was the gut punch we needed.
Let me read what I was going to say. JDog_21 said, it said, writing was absolute garbage. Some of the fire effects looked like from the first decade of the century, which again, a lot of people noting that. Didn't think it looked very good. And then another person who mentioned like more time would have been great. Said it works for HBO Max. But they just, you know, some people, it didn't work. Eric Otter Stratton said the book is so much better. Said everyone hates that guy, but he's like, this one, I just can't not say the book is better, which is fair. When it's like, when it comes down to being not great, yeah, I think saying the book is better is typically a pretty good thing to say. That's fair.
The fire looked good in the theaters. I think the experience got a little bit less in watching at home, but in the theaters, and you can hear the fire crackling like up in your fucking eardrums, and like you can see
the progression
it looks good.
Of that. I like the progression of the fire. It sounded good.
Mm-hmm. It was a little bit frightening. I think they thought the fire was going to be scarier than it actually was. Like the fire was supposed to be its own little villain, and it really just kind of wasn't. It was just there. You know,
it just it.
And that's part of the why I think it also felt like a 90s movie is because it was like natural disaster. You know, the natural disaster was in there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just doesn't. And it didn't feel fleshed out. It didn't feel full. It just felt like a movie that was missing a lot, and not missing a lot in like, wow, that was a full movie that didn't have substance. Like it just like you could have added so much more on to add context. And it felt very. It just didn't out, feel like the rest of Taylor Sheridan's catalog. And that's kind of the last thing we'll talk about here. Like, where do we stand with Taylor Sheridan now? Like, you, Kendrick, you just kind of mentioned it a little bit. You went into, like, what else is he doing? But he's, I would say, kind of one for two on directing. Like, I think this is definitely a miss, where Wind River is obviously a hit. Like, no doubt about it.
If Taylor Sheridan, if Wind River wasn't a Weinstein joint at the extremely worst time possible, it would have absolutely, I think, been way more advertised and way more well-received and just way more popular than it actually is. But this one is not good. And I'm willing to partially blame it on the fact that it wasn't 100% his, you know what I mean? Like obviously you co-wrote again, the adaptation of the script with the writer and had the other guy as well. So I'm willing to spread out the blame a little bit on this one, but there is going to be a point now. We're at the reckoning for Sheridan where it's like this guy's missing. He's starting to miss. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm going to be, you know, I'm just going to say like Wind River a lot in terms of directing. I mean, obviously Hell or High Water and Sicario in terms of writing. I mean, the Without Remorse thing. We talked about that. I mean, that movie's been in production hell. So like, who knows how much of that was his. The thing about it though, is this wasn't a bad movie for as much as we're shitting on it. It just wasn't as good as two of the movies we really liked.
Well, and, three of them.
Maybe three. Three, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Sicario.
Well, movie run that was just ridiculous. Ridiculous. Sicario, Hell or High Water, Wind River. Like that is... There's people in their careers they could hope for just three movies that good, let alone back to back to back. And so I think the standard is obviously like the bar is very high. And so there is a level of unfair where now, like when you hear Taylor Sheridan, you're like, oh, he's going to put out not a good movie, like an Oscar worthy movie, not just an Oscar one, like a mainstream beloved Oscar movie, not just like some artsy thing. So, I mean, he kind of, like the neo-Western thing is like, that's Taylor Sheridan. So I think the expectation thing has a lot to do with it. It is, it's a bummer to see. It's a bummer to see this one pan out, but like, I'm not going to kind of say no on Taylor Sheridan now. Again, he's one for two directing. I'm not a Yellowstone guy, so I can't really.
Oh, Yellowstone's so good. Oh.
Yeah, I know people love it. Again, add it to the fucking list. Movies. I'm a movies guy.
Well, it's kind of.
More excuse, but.
I mean, it kind of reminds me of like the emotional arc I went through with like Nick Pizzolatto and Pizzolatto and
True Detective. Yeah.
Yeah. Where, I mean, that you kind of go into like that first season was so good and that second season was so bad and the third season was good, but it was that drop off from the second season where you're like, just do the thing we liked again. And some of it just might be like catching lightning in a bottle, and that's okay. Like, I mean, you got to that point, you've written three movies that people generally like, and you know, maybe that was all you had to say. Maybe you got more in the tank. It doesn't really matter. I just think, the big takeaway is like with anything, you can't really, as we've done, I mean, guilty as charged, you can't really let the hype of previous work, unless there's like decades of continued, like almost like Scorsese or something like that, where you're obviously like a legend. I know it's like a shitty comparison because it's Scorsese, but it's just kind of like you got to lower expectations sometimes, because, you know, maybe like worst case scenario is you don't get something delivered that's on the same caliber as Sicario 1 or Hell or High Water or Wind River again, but like what you have is like mildly entertaining gritty action movies, and those are fine. They're not what we expected, so it just might be ratcheting those expectations a little bit, especially since it's such a small sample size.
Yeah, and I think maybe part of it too is us propping him up a ton, and like we give him, we gave him a shit ton of credit for Sicario and Hell or High Water. He obviously didn't direct either of those. And like, he had Denis Villeneuve, who's one of the best directors in the game right now. Fucking
people attached to those.
Yeah. So like, maybe we're overcrediting him on those two, but like Wind River, he directed, he wrote, he was fantastic. He did a great, great job in that. So like that, I think, was more for me than the other two, the barometer I was working off of for this movie. And maybe that's why I'm disappointed. So it definitely is unfair maybe for us to use those other two as a full example. But I do think the dialogue in those two movies is just so good and so much more exceptional. And in the way he built both those worlds is just so much more well done than what he did in this movie. And it's, again, a bummer. And I don't want to make that like the sign of ill things to come, because I do think that partially this is just, it's tough adapting a book, I guess. And I don't know. Yellowstone still fucking rules. He's still making really good stuff. So he's still got it. Taylor Sheridan still got it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the criticism's directed inward. It goes back to the whole, how much you want to be a fan of somebody and how much you want to build up expectations in your own mind of like what they can deliver. And I think the answer to that is don't ever do that. Just have zero expectations for anything, or minimal expectations. Because at the end of the day, if you set the bar low, then you're going to be pleasantly surprised more often than not, rather than setting it high and being disappointed and having to go back and nitpick stuff. It's a lesson learned. But I still liked it. I still give it a 60. It's fine. It's disappointing. It's a messy movie. There are moments in it that are genuinely entertaining, but it still is messy. But would I rather watch this 400 times and watch without remorse once? Yes.
Very, very true. And again, I think the one great thing about this, seeing Angelina Jolie back in action, is just great. I missed Angelina. I missed Angie. Old Angie.
Commonly referred to Angie.
Angie.
Mr. Man, she was great.
Angie, yeah, and you know, we're gonna be seeing more of Angelina Jolie, obviously, in the Eternals. So yeah, it's good to have familiar faces
back. Yep. We're doing The Woman in the Window next week. Is that Netflix?
Yes.
Netflix. Yes. Okay. Woman in the Window. That'll be on Sunday. Yes, Netflix indeed. That's already out. And I do believe it sucks.
I've been hearing weird things. I believe it was adapted off of a short that I think was very well received. And this just, I think the Oscar hopes for this one got dashed quite quickly. Early into screenings.
It's based off the short story of somebody seeing a woman in the window one time. Said, well, what if this was a movie?
First movie adapted straight from a 4chan log. It's crazy how that worked out.
It's just another creepypasta movie.
Yeah. Huh? Exactly.
All right. Last thing. It's draft time. Sports video game characters draft. So again, you're drafting to like a release. You're not just drafting Michael Jordan because he's a great, like it's release to release. Ken Jack, you went last time. You go first this time, followed by Trill in the audience and myself. One football player, one baseball player, one basketball player, and then two wild card. And I'm going to allow you to do any sport.
I assume that was the case for wild card, that we like could go anywhere you wanted.
But you could do two baseball if you wanted.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure it's a smart idea. Let's see. Ken Jack, your first pick.
I mean, people would fucking murder me if I didn't take Pablo Sanchez right off the bat. Just has to be done. Absolutely has to be done.
Well, what sport?
I'm taking a backyard baseball.
Yeah.
He's the best baseball player of all time. He's the best athlete, he's the best runner, best hitter, best everything there is in the entire fucking game. Little short guy, backwards hat. He was cool as hell. And then I think if I had to pick which backyard baseball would be, backyard baseball 2001, very specifically, because that was when I played on PC.
I love the MLB ones best, by the way. I love when you integrated the Major League Baseball players. That was so fucking cool.
Young Randy Johnson just throwing fireballs.
Yeah. You could have Kenny Lofton drop down a bunt and get on base with ease. If you had Kenny Lofton and Pete Wheeler leading off 1-2,
stinky Pete.
Two base runners guaranteed. Just drop a bunt down.
Do you remember
bunting in backyard baseball?
They would have like the World Series in like that giant stadium where it'd be like, I don't know what they call it, like a floating thing like going through the entire stadium. It was so cool.
Something dome. Yeah, it was like a blimp thing. Yeah. Okay. Trill, you're up next.
Okay. I got to take
this
out.
By the way, I'm going to note, you can get creative because I'm going to absolutely potentially cheat here. Not cheat, but like bend the rules. So if you can, you want to get creative, NBA Jam, you want to take a duo, I'm just saying.
Okay.
I'm going to allow it.
Look, I'm going to get ahead of this because I know Mike Tyson is going to be picked for Mike Tyson's punch out, right? But I'm not taking Mike Tyson. I'm taking Little Mac because Little Mac beats Mike Tyson in Mike Tyson's punch out. People don't remember this. People are they're thinking of Mike Tyson from the video game. In canon, you're supposed to beat the video game. And when you do, Little Mac beats Mike Tyson. And Little Mac's like 5'2". And Mike Tyson in the video game is like 10'8". And therefore, Little Mac's the better boxer than Mike Tyson in the punch out video game. And I'm taking Little Mac. And the audience or somebody's going to pick Mike Tyson. But guess what? That's wrong because Little Mac is supposed to beat Mike Tyson, and he does.
Okay.
Didn't expect that. That was a wild card for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you probably could have got him late and picked him and Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
No, but I wanted to get ahead of the Mike Tyson pick because now when someone says Mike Tyson, they're going to feel bad because Little Mac, you can be better than Mike Tyson.
Okay. That was a surprise pick for sure. Surprise pick. I'm going to go Michael Vick Madden 04. He was a complete cheat code. He was easily the best player in that game. One of the best ever. The playmaker thing they took away. You could point out to your blockers. Why did they take that away?
Mm-hmm. What a
sick fucking feature that was.
Well, because your blockers missing is part of the fun experience of the Madden games. Otherwise, it'd be too easy.
True, but that was awesome being able to point out to your blockers.
Having to play against someone in Madden Online that could call out their blockers would be absolutely infuriating because it would make even like the worst but fast quarterback like the best in the league.
It was terrifying. Somebody dropped Michael Vick back 20 yards behind the line of scrimmage. You still knew it was going to be an 80-yard play.
Yep.
Terrible.
My next thing feels like a cheat. I feel like I shouldn't be allowed to do this. And if you guys can strike it down. But because I think the player is not as much the guy as it is the triple option itself, and that's Pat White, West Virginia. But I want to note that I'll just take Pat White, but the names needs to also note that it's Steve Slayton, Noel Devine, and Owen Schmidt. Like that was what it was. Pat White was Pat White because you had one of those guys running the triple option with him. It was Pat White triple option NCAA football.
Yeah, I say you include all the names on the list because it's part of like a tandem or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. White, Slayton, Devine, Noel Devine, the best fucking high school, one of the best high school tapes of all time, and Owen Schmidt, NCAA football. If you played with that online and you didn't win, you stunk, plain and simple.
And the triple option is a great commitment to winning because it's the most boring way to play the game.
Yes, it is. Or screenplay. Actually, that was another cheat, which now many people would use. Trindon Holiday on LSU.
Wow.
Screenplays to Trindon Holiday, always a touchdown.
Shout out to Pat McAfee. Laid him the fuck out.
Did he always? Not? Yeah, I think he did, right? Did he?
He was in the Broncos. Obviously, Pat was on the Colts.
Trindon Holiday used to do phantom fair catches and then would run with them. Did that against Penn State in the Capital One.
I would do that.
Yeah.
You should be able to do that in a Madden game and like risk being flagged.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The right stick controls the right hand and you can just like up the right stick a little bit just to go like a little bit this and just try to.
Who's that guy on the Bears? Something Knox. Because they did that, they ran that one play once where like the guy was laying on the ground and they faked it going or receiving the other end and they didn't see him on the ground and he got up, caught the ball, and then ran with it.
Was it Kevin Knox?
It was something Knox, and he was like a receiver, punt return, kick returner. Our Chicago listeners so pissed.
Kevin
right
Knox.
Now.
Kevin Knox okay. is a basketball.
Wait,
player.
For who? Wait. Yeah, Kevin Knox.
It was something Knox on the Bears, and they did like there was two guys back to receive a punt or a kick, and one of them was laying down.
Yeah, they did a fake return, and then somebody on the other side.
Johnny Knox. Yeah, and I always remember I remember Knox on the Bears because he was always one of those receivers you got in your fantasy draft, and I always thought it was going to be the year that Johnny Knox was going to go off.
He had a low number, right? Did he have a cheese number?
13.
Before Devin Hester was returning punts, kicks, and missed field goals, it was Nathan Vasher.
Wow.
Nathan Vasher. He had the record for a while. Then Antonio Cromartie broke it in Minneapolis.
Yeah, 109 point something. On that kick return.
I think the
missed field goal.
both 109 yard returns all happened in Minnesota, in Minneapolis. Both of them did kick returns, I think. Audience, by the way, they picked Bo Jackson with their first pick. That was their first pick. I think I skipped over the audience. They got Bo Jackson. Came back around
from Tecmo Bowl.
I never really played Tecmo Bowl.
Neither did I.
That is the pick that makes sense, though.
Yeah, he was really good, but I've never experienced playing as Bo Jackson in Tecmo Bowl. Therefore, I don't want to take him, you know?
I imagine our audience probably didn't either. Our audience then picked Steph Curry in NBA 2K16.
Yeah, that was the year when they still couldn't totally figure out how to make a defensible three. So it's just like you could shoot from anywhere on the fucking court.
Yeah,
and it was so frustrating.
I didn't play it a ton, but I remember how unstoppable he was.
Yeah, that was annoying.
Back around the trill.
I'm going to take Randy Moss when Randy Moss was on the cover of the NFL 2K game.
2K3? Yeah, 2K3, yes.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that his character model was 7'3" in that game. and literally all you had to do was throw the ball in his general direction and press the, like, whatever button it was on the Dreamcast.
Spectacular catch
button. I don't even remember. Or he probably was on the PlayStation 2 at that point. The triangle. Universal catch triangle. But yeah, like Randy Moss was so fun to play in those games because I mean you just throw it to him. It's better than the triple option because throwing the ball far in the sports video game, that's why Madden exists, to throw bombs. Mm-hmm. And if you're not throwing a bomb in Madden, you're not playing the game correctly.
If you're throwing a slant for any reason other than a third down and you need to keep it moving, I hate you. Straight up.
If your playbook isn't four verts,
yeah. Just,
all four verts, then
just scrolling through the shotgun option in the Madden thing, then yeah, not just I don't want to ever play you in Madden because number one, you'll beat me, and number two, you're a coward. Just bomb it.
You have back to back picks again, Jack.
My first one, I'll do this is tough because I'm going to do basketball and football back to back. Let's do Chris Johnson, Madden 11. Because he was absolutely unstoppable. That was just the year where they're just like, yeah, you know what? Running backs are back. And he just, nothing you could do would stop him from just either juking out or just running straight through 500 tackles. And it was infuriating playing against the Titans that year. And then I'll back to back it with Jamal Crawford in 2K13, the year that the Clippers year, I think it was 2K13. Because like essentially like Chris Paul would draw away focus, Blake Griffin would draw away focus, and he would just hit anywhere on the map. Or anyone on the map, anywhere on the court, you just pull up from a three and it's going in no matter what. Nothing you can do about it whatsoever.
Also, I feel like 2K13 and like there was like that stretch, like 2K, like College Hoops 2K6. If you could master the timing on threes, you would never miss. Like if you saw eye level, like during like the certain animations, and I feel like 2K13, you could still pretty much figure that out.
That was before they figured it out, like, oh, we should probably make the AI and have them miss some threes and make it like more accurate NBA portrayal. And at this point, like, you could literally go like 20 for 20 from 3-point range with Jamal Crawford. And if like you had someone bite for even a second, he could just do obviously an amazing crossover and just run straight to the hoop. And then he was just, again, an infuriating guy to play against in 2K, but great to have on your team.
Yep. That's a good pick. Jamal Crawford. Yeah. If you had all those basketball games for that era, it's like, if you had two guys to draw away, and then a third, you won.
Nothing anyone else can do.
Trill, your next pick. Yeah. Randy Moss.
I'm going to take Ken Griffey Jr. from the N64 Ken Griffey game.
Yeah.
I mean, the only swing they bothered to.
The fucking circle with the red, the yellow dot circle from the Slugfest games. Yep. It was huge.
You could, if you couldn't get a hit with Griff,
I think only Paul Molitor had a bigger circle.
See, I don't even remember.
Paul Molitor's was fucking gigantic. Ripken might have as well. Somebody really good had a smaller circle. But yeah, Griffey, if you couldn't get a hit with Griffey, get a different
that
game.
Sliding was really fun in that game.
Mm.
I think.
That's my sports game growing up. Slugfest. Ken Griffey Jr. Presents. Geronimo Baroa, best name in that game.
Never played it.
Was there another player that you played with, Trill, though? I think, was there another like non-Griffey that you remember? Like, you think of that game, who do you think of other than
maybe Griffey? Rafael Palmeiro?
Yeah.
I was a big. I can't remember if he was an
Orioles man, I believe, for that game.
He was at the Rangers to like what 90. 9 or something like that.
Yeah, he was an Orioles man, I believe, for that game. I think Piazza had a big circle, maybe. He might
Didn't Piazza have his own game?
He was on the cover of Backyard Baseball.
Cover. I think he was on the cover of a regular game as well. Unless I can picture him on a cartridge.
He was in Tekken.
he's playable in Street Fighter. Him versus Chun-Li. Chun-Li just squeezing the life out of him. He's just loving it.
Audience, their next pick. They're going a little more out of the box. Yoshi Mario Kart.
Okay.
Was Yoshi
good? I respect that pick. Strong. Yeah, I mean, Yoshi was always my pick.
Okay. What was the
Yoshi and Toad were the fastest.
Were they the fastest? Their fastest acceleration, right? Not the fastest top speed. Yeah. Which in that game, top speed, I mean, you're turning so much, I don't know how much it really matters. I don't know what the tiers. I'm gonna look up Mario Kart tier rankings.
I got back to back now. I'm gonna go baseball. I'm going with the artist formerly known as Barry Bonds, John Dowd from MVP 2005. Wow, yeah. Back when he wasn't Barry Bonds, he didn't have the rights to Barry Bonds. This is the era where it was like no Belichick, no in football, no Bonds in this game. John Dowd was unreal. And if you were not of the age where you understood what that was, you're like, who the fuck is this guy batting after Jeff Kent? That is so fucking good. Who is this guy? And it was just Barry Bonds. It's just John Dowd. As like opposite of Barry Bonds as possible.
I felt there's this one kid in our high school who's his name was John Dowd, and he was a band nerd. I felt so bad for him. Just a terrible legacy to have to live up to.
But didn't
one of the John greatest Dowd virtual have, basketball players ever, or baseball players ever.
Didn't he look like Mark McGwire?
He like kind of had some McGwire vibes.
Yeah.
And then my next pick, I'm going to go out of the box as well because I can't decide on my basketball. And I'm going to go with this is the game that got me into the sport. Like, I wasn't a big fan of the sport until this, and that's World Cup 2010 Didier Drogba for Ivory Coast.
Oh, monster,
that's back when the game was just the World Cup.
Yep.
Had the Vuvuzelas, had all that. Didier Drogba was unstoppable in that game. All you had to do was I'm trying to think of the orientation of the game. You typically did it if you were going from right to left, depending on what half you started on, and you would just dribble with Didier Drogba at the top of the box, and then when you kind of reach like in between the corner of the box and then right in the middle of it, you would just do the finesse shot into the top right of the goal, and you would score almost every time. And that was the World Cup with Diego Forlán and the Joe Bellani ball anyway, so it was kind of realistic. You just always score, the ball would bend, but Didier Drogba was unbelievable in FIFA World Cup 10.
Drogba was good in FIFA 10 too. With Chelsea. Yeah.
Forlán as well.
I with Drogba, I always did like, what was the L1 called to make a run and then just tap a little through ball.
Through ball, right through him. Yeah. And you could do air through ball, L1 to triangle and just right to him.
Then I would do the arm spin out to midfield, then hit the robot.
I was always partial to the somersault into the guns. Always loved that. Robbie Keane.
If all you had to do was just run along like the top near side part of the penalty box, penalty area, whatever you want to call it, with Drogba, which hit that finesse. That's still how I play that game. I haven't played FIFA in a while, though. I fucking love FIFA. Always very good. Audience, their next pick. They're going baseball. They're going Keisha Phillips, Backyard Baseball.
Wow.
Keisha Phillips was powerful.
Not as good as Pablo Sanchez.
No, she wasn't as good as Pablo Sanchez. I thought maybe they might pick Kenny Kawaguchi.
Yeah.
But Keisha Phillips. Dmitry Petrovich. We've talked about Dmitry Petrovich multiple times.
Please, Mr. Gorbachev.
she was a monster. She was quick as fuck, and she was also insanely powerful. Keisha is the neighborhood clown, but she takes her baseball pretty serious. Her speed and coordination make her a logical choice for the outfield. That was her. The clown. They called her a clown. Do you ever play backyard soccer, by the way?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They had some old legends in that game.
It's probably like fucking, what's his name? Shit. Who's the asshole US player that's now thinks he's the top shit in soccer forever? shitty name. Alexi Lawless is probably one of the names in that one.
I don't think so. I'm trying to see who they had. They had like actual
backyard soccer known as what the fuck?
They had actual
1998.
They had actual like famous. Then they had one backyard basketball that it was only Lisa Leslie and Kevin Garnett. Man, I'm trying to figure it out. Yeah, there was like there was like MLS players, basically. I'll have to figure out what it is. Trill, your next pick.
I'm going to take Michael Vick, except in NFL Street.
Ah, okay.
Good pick.
So NFL Street, bring it back.
Not but, Ricky Williams?
So, but as quarterback, Vick could do it all. Ricky Williams was great. The best players in that game were Michael Vick, Donovan McNabb, Ricky Williams, Sean Alexander, Randy Moss, and then trying to think of, gosh, who are some other offensive players in that game? Maybe Marvin Harris. I don't know. Pretty much just Michael Vick and Donovan McNabb were the two best quarterbacks. But I take Vick because he was better than McNabb.
Should have blitzed the league. Bill Romanowski, I think, was one of the guys in that, right?
there was the one that would try to do the it was like the story mode on that.
Yeah, and you like press X to break opposing player's leg. Press B to like send prostitutes to their room before the game.
Press X,
they're tired.
And then press F to pay respects.
Yes, exactly. The Holy Trinity, you would say, blitz the league.
It, by the way, just here it is. This was backyard soccer MLS edition. Brian McBride, John Harkis, Kobe Jones. Who else in here? Carlos Valderrama was in it. Wow.
Brian McBride shattering his face in the World Cup. Great moment.
Yeah. Michael Vick, NFL Street. NFL Street was a fucking awesome game.
It was.
It was a frustrating game. Because it was much like Blitz in that the, you know, if you were about to score a touchdown, the opposing player would run so fast to get you, but it was still fun.
Kenjek, you have back-to-back picks.
All right, back-to-back. I'm going to do my number four. This is very, very specific because my brother had bought a Wii, my youngest brother, and I didn't like any of the games on it other than Wii Sports. So Matt from Wii Sports, the best boxing champ. He was the boxing champ. Matt was impossible. This guy, and it's not a playable character. He's a guy you fight. You fight Matt. He's the best boxer in Wii Boxing. Just look up Matt Wii Boxing, and he's just a scary dude, man. He beats the absolute shit out of you. And I burn more calories doing that than any workout I've ever done in my entire life, just trying to beat fucking Matt in Wii Boxing. And I think he's become somewhat of a mean in recent times, but he was a scary ass dude. And then for my next pick, I'm going to kind of do what you did as well with the Pat White thing. And I'm going to pick, it's a quad group of players from 3-on-3 NHL Arcade. Cause in that game, you get to pick three players. You can pick from all around fast players, strong players, and then you're going to pick a goalie. I would always pick the same quad group of players. And that would be Crosby, Kovalchuk, and then Chara. And we had two good all rounds and then one big. And then I would pick Brodeur as my goalie, and I almost would never lose. 3-on-3 NHL Arcade, I would love if they brought the game back because it was absolutely incredible. It was so much fun. But that trio, I never lost with that group. They were so good.
Trill, you should pick LeBron James from that hockey game you played on iPhone.
Oh, yeah. That was the game that was the big game after that Apple Arcade announcement. It's like, we got a hockey game with a bunch of crossover athletes, and that game sucked.
NHL Arcade was a good game. That's a good pick for hockey. We needed some hockey rep on here. I couldn't pick. I know Jeremy Roenick was unstoppable in NHL, and Pavel Bure was always insane in the mid '90s. But I just didn't play those enough. Only recent hockey guys. I can't make that pick. All right, Ken Jack, good rounding out of yours. Trill, your basketball pick to end it.
Oh yeah, I got to do a basketball pick, don't I?
Yeah, you have to now.
So yeah, I'm surprised. I completely forgot we had to pick certain players from certain brackets. So I'm glad I backed my ass into that. I'm gonna pick Michael Jordan from what was the NBA 2K?
12?
I think it was like 10. Where it's like, we got Michael Jordan on the cover.
Wasn't that 12? Am I going crazy? I don't know.
Maybe.
It's probably 10. I don't know.
They probably put him on the cover multiple times because they paid so much for Michael Jordan. But I think 10 he was on the cover, and he was just a lot of fun to play with. Obviously, if you're going to put Michael Jordan on the cover, greatest basketball player of all time, you're going to make him really great in the game. He's a lot of fun to play with. Awesome layup package. Create a player. Give yourself MJ's layup package, and you're golden.
That was very cool when they added in the retro teams, but then when you play with them or someone else will play them, I'm like, I know Kevin McHale's not 95 overall. I mean, get the fuck out of here. Come on. Now, let's be real here. Like Michael Jordan, yes, absolutely, but come on.
I want to play with like James Naismith, like an 1899 retro team.
James Naismith.
Audience, they picked their last one. This was spam voted, but I'm giving it to Waluigi from Mario Tennis.
And of all the people I would have picked, like, there's a lot of...
he debuted Mario there, though, right?
Maybe. I would have picked, like, Bowser in Super Mario Baseball. Bowser, unstoppable hitter in Super Mario Baseball. He was on my list as well. So even with, like Donkey Kong, amazing pitcher. I'm trying to think of, like, other... I feel like there's a lot of sports with Super Mario that we left off the board.
Yeah, first appearance, Mario Tennis. My last pick is Sean Kemp, NBA Jam. Almost went with Allen Iverson, NBA 2K3, another cover athlete. The 2K cover athlete bumps were huge. T.O. got that for Madden, NFL 2K5. Randy Moss, Trill, you already picked that. But I'm going to go Sean Kemp because when you play an NBA Jam, you want a great dunker, and Sean Kemp was kind of the man. Other was left off the list, Peyton Manning, Madden 06. The vision cone was the field.
Yeah.
It was the whole field. Randall Cut, also Madden 06, like that kind of like – her running quarterbacks, their vision cones are always small. It kind of took that out of the game. I still love the vision cone. Randall Cunningham, Tech Mobile, Adrian Peterson, NCAA 07 was unstoppable. Vince Young was unstoppable as well in his NCAA game.
There was like a 5-year stretch of Madden games where the tight end position, if you had a good tight end, was unstoppable and unguardable. Mm-hmm. Like if you had Gronkowski, if you had Gonzalez, if you had, I'm trying to think, like even like Antonio Gates, like you could not cover any of them no matter how hard you tried. If you controlled the player, it didn't matter. You were fucked. Those were unstoppable.
So I just looked up James Naismith. I don't know how I pronounce it Naismith, but you know me. His head coaching record.
Casey Neistat.
Yeah. His head coaching record for basketball is 55-60.
Oh,
you invented basketball.
dude. Imagine being like destroyed in your own game.
That sucks.
You invented this game.
Pedro Martinez and Ken Griffey Slugfest was also great. Devin Hester, Madden 08, he was 100 speed. That was the first one, I believe. I think Chris Johnson got 100 speed as well, the one you were talking about, Ken Jack. Mm-hmm. Allen Iverson, 2K3, I mentioned. Yao Ming, 2K8, many people had on list. He was unstoppable. Tiger Woods in any Tiger Woods game. Jeremy Roenick, yeah. NHL 94. Pavel Bure in the 90s NHL games is great. And then Tony Hawk in Pro Skater. What about Darth Maul and Tony Hawk Pro Skater? Also, Uchman, our yeah. producer, says Exhibit in NFL Street Volume 2.
I don't think I ever played as Exhibit.
Darth Maul. Wasn't Shrek in...
Oh, I think he was.
Shrek, yeah. Shret. All right, that's it. That was fun.
This is a good draft. Over
Naismith is the only Kansas coach with a losing record.
Wow. Again, that's embarrassing, dude. Own game.
Anything else? Yeah.
Couldn't recruit.
Couldn't recruit. Yeah, hey, you want to come play basketball? What's that? It's pretty tough to recruit.
Actually, really, I'm gonna screenshot this and tweet it out. You're like, what? It's just a bunch of question marks.
A new rule. It's like golf now. You make a basket, it's bad.
Yeah. This isn't working well for me here.
It's a stroke now.
You just tell the ref. Being
just that bad at the game you invented.
You're down 20 at halftime. You tell the refs, like, yeah, actually, they committed a double dribble, which means they lose 50 points.
I love that.
What can they do? They can't say anything. You invented it.
How did he get into the Basketball Hall of Fame? He has a losing record.
Get into it. It's named after him.
I'm fine with naming it after him, but you can't induct him with that 55 and 60.
Imagine if he wasn't inducted in his own Hall of Fame.
The results aren't there, James.
I love
Dr.
that.
Dr. James?
His first year, he went 7-4, and he was like, I got this down. And then he went 3-4 and had no winning records until his second to last year. He went 12-7, and he must have been like, all right, we're back. And then he went 7-8, and he hung him up. He's like, fuck this shit.
Done with this. Unbelievable. Kick him out. They got to kick him out for the integrity of the Hall of Fame. They got to rename it.
Pathetic. Just
we got to start the LCB campaign to kick James Naismith out of the Naismith Hall of Fame.
Just pathetic. I don't know.
Stupid. I mean, it probably was different back then. Maybe like a 7-8 record is the best of the league or something. Actually, don't know how mathematically that works out, but.
I don't think it does.
Yeah.
Not a chance. He stunk. I mean, thanks for inventing a cool sport, but.
The Kansas City Gazette or the, what was the Kansas City Star? It's like, is Dr. James on the hot seat? Turn to page 6 and find out.
Positively embarrassing. Good Lord.
Fucking James. Okay. That was a good anything else. Now anything else.
No, I think that's it. Gonna go play more RE Village.
Oh, me too. Me too.
Is that the thing with the large woman that you follow around? Okay, and that's what I thought.
9-foot woman. Oh, it's amazing. It's incredible.
Yeah, and her vampire daughters.
Yeah, 3 daughters too. It's a hard battle. It was a hard fought battle to get rid of them as well. So
not if you play an easy difficulty, my friend.
Yeah, you truly have mastered that.
No, I instead of doing that, I played on normal, but I was just reading walkthroughs the entire way because I was too annoyed and frustrated by the puzzles. So it's the same difference. X cancel each other out.
And on easy difficulty, I just stand there with a shotgun taking damage. Just pumping the shotgun into the demon.
Woman in the Window next on Sunday. That's it for Ken Jack and Trump. Jeff Lowe, talk to you next time. Have a